me if it is a little premature or even inappropriate, but one of the most powerful scenes in I Swear, the film that has picked up that BAFTA in rather splendid fashion, involves the head teacher of the main character beating him close to senseless because he thought that the kid had control over the impulses that were a consequence of Tourette's. And, of course, with special educational needs, that is the fundamental problem, in that people who understand nothing think that they know everything and that the children are somehow to blame. I'll make a bit more of this in a moment.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer has admitted the current system for supporting children with special educational needs does not work. The government is setting out plans to make provision in England more inclusive. It's understood that children's care plans could be reassessed after they leave primary school. Schools Minister Georgia Gould was asked on LBC this morning about those reports.
I just want to say two points of real reassurance for parents. The first is if your child is at a special school, your child will remain at a special school for the whole of their education. And if your child is at a mainstream school, you know, we are building up new support and a new system. So, you know, we won't be asking anyone to transition to that new system until that support is put in place.
Police searches of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's former home in Windsor are due to move into a fifth day. He was arrested last week on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The former prince has previously denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. A public inquiry is due to start into the Nottingham stabbings in June 2023. Two students and a school caretaker were killed by Vado Calicane. The hearings will examine events leading up to the attacks by Calicane, who'd been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia 3 years prior. The Foreign Office has urged British nationals in parts of Mexico to stay indoors and avoid unnecessary travel. There have been violent clashes following the death of a drug cartel leader known as El Mencho. He was killed in a military operation yesterday. Journalist Adam Hancock, who's in Mexico City, says the situation looks to be calming down.
The authorities here have managed to get control of some of the blockades that were put in place across the country by members of the cartel. It's quite a common tactic from cartel members here to blockade roads to try and stop military operations and cause a little bit of chaos.
And the BBC has apologised after a racial slur shouted during the BAFTAs ceremony was broadcast. It's reported it was shouted by a member of the audience who had Tourette's syndrome. The film I Swear, about a man with the condition, won 3 awards. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 12 at 10,674. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, heavy rain will continue for northern and western areas. Some sunny spells later for the south and in the east, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young is simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT. Rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire. 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10. I always get a little bit nervous when this happens. So I knew what I wanted to talk to you about. But no, rephrase, rewind, start again. I knew what I wanted you to talk to me about today. And it's not a particularly brilliant question, but it is, I think, a more illuminating way into the growing clamour surrounding special educational needs and the imminent announcement by government of what changes they are going to make to the system. You could be forgiven for not understanding from some of the coverage this morning that they are going to improve it, or at least they're going to aim to improve it radically. Of course, with a white paper imminent, you can't expect government ministers to reveal what is in it. Everybody who does this for a living completely understands that. Some of us, I suppose, will always pretend not to, but white papers are never any more than a budget. Well, a budget, I suppose, is a bit these days, but they will never give you, in answer to a journalist's question, detail of what the 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 boss, what the Secretary of State is due to announce later today. You can file that under 101. And of course, if they are to reassess, then there are one or two cases in every 100 where people have got better. Dealing with some of these conditions, they respond to therapy, they respond to treatment, they respond to medication. So if you jump through the myriad hoops required to secure an EHCP, then it is not beyond reasonable doubt or beyond the realms of possibility that you may no longer need it by the time you reach sixth form. And at the moment, there's no real revolving assessment, and therefore, if they introduce a little bit of later assessment, I don't think at this point it would be responsible of me to encourage you to panic. I know quite a lot about this world for a number of reasons, not least godchildren. And therefore, I think in the context of mainstream journalists, I'm pretty close to unique. There are some, of course, who pound this beat and understand a lot more about it than I do. But generally speaking, the idiocy, the ignorance, the willful ignorance that people bring to conversations about conditions that they haven't heard of before and therefore can't believe exist can make bad situations worse. So the thing that I get nervous about is thinking about, what are we talking, 9:59 as I sit down in the studio and wonder how late Nick will be for that final news bulletin. Will I be 10 seconds or 40 seconds after the hour before Dominic kicks in with those headlines? I had a thought, and my thought was this. I Swear is a brilliant film. You know it's a brilliant film because I told you, even if you haven't seen it, I told you whenever it came out months ago that if you wanted to watch one of those films that just leaves you absolutely tear-soaked and gobsmacked in equal measure, then go and see I Swear. It's a beautiful film in many ways, but also brutal, heartbreaking, and quite traumatizing, I imagine, if you've had anything close to similar experiences. And one of the most traumatic moments involves the central character, based upon very much upon the real life experiences of a lovely bloke called John McDonald. It involves him being beaten by a particularly Victorian or stentorian head teacher at his comprehensive school in Hull because he keeps swearing. I just want to try to describe it to you with the caveat that it's a while since I watched it. But imagine being called into the head teacher's study because you have been swearing in class, effing and jeffing, and worse. And when you are sitting in the headmaster's study, preparing almost certainly for a literal caning, as the era is such that the headteacher would have had a specially designed implement with which to inflict as much pain as is humanly possible upon a smallish child, and you are there knowing that you are about to be beaten, and in response to the headmaster's insistence that you promise never to do it again, you swear. You use language that would make, to coin a phrase, a sailor blush. And so he beats you even harder. Just pause for a minute and think about that, if you would. You're there because you swear. You can't help but swear. Many people don't even understand that. The era in which I Swear is set is right upon the cusp. It's often hilarious, by the way, intentionally hilarious. But it's right on the cusp of Tourette's becoming something that people understood, people appreciated, people could empathise with. But it was far from the case at the time that John was growing up. So he's there in a school, in a head teacher's office, very much of the era. If you're close to my age, you'll probably have a smell of floor polish in your nostrils at the moment. I don't know if you ever had to wait outside a head teacher's office, a head teacher's study, waiting to be beaten. My school was posh. The school in Hull that John Davidson, not John McDonald, forgive me, that John attended was far from posh, so he probably didn't have the big grandfather clock ticking with an echo that sounded sometimes as if it would make its way to the moon and back before you actually got into the room. We used to stand outside listening to our friends get beaten. But I'd always, well, almost always, now's not the time to air ancient grievances, I'd almost always done something wrong. I never deserved to get beaten by a grown man. It took me many years to understand that. But I'd almost always done something over which I had some degree of control. We may get onto how much control a little later. And the teacher beat him for the symptoms of his condition. That's what he was beaten for the symptoms of his condition. And in the process of being told off for the symptoms of his condition, he displayed those symptoms again, so he got beaten even harder. And the question I was going to ask you this morning with regards to special educational needs, and listen, forgive my ignorance, I don't even know that Tourette's gets filed under special educational needs in this kind of context, but the point still stands. What did it used to be like? How many phone-ins have we done together? How many have you heard? I try not to go down the completely obvious question when we turn our attention to this issue, but how many have you heard about what it's like now? How many lazy right-wing columnists have you read or listened to or watched telling you that none of these conditions exist, that opposition defiance disorder is a load of old nonsense, or school refusal is just because kids need a good slap, or back in my day they wouldn't have had the option? And none of that's true, you know, because back in their day kids would disappear. They would slip through the cracks of school. They would end up falling into bad company, as we used to call it, or they would simply be farmed to the corner of the classroom and completely ignored for the duration of their education, which would end with them being signally ill-equipped to make any progress in the wider world at all, leading to a massively increased or enhanced likelihood of them falling into criminality or relying upon the welfare state or possibly both. So this idea that it didn't happen in my day was absolutely bonkers. I've got my Johns the wrong way round today. I'll clarify that later. Gala Shields is where the real bloke grew up, and the actor who won the BAFTA is from Hull. But all of these are details. I'm glad you're correcting me, because it proves my point about it being so long since I saw the film that I've forgotten some of the details. But I'll never forget. I never forget watching boys get beaten, for personal reasons. And he got beaten because he couldn't help himself. Jamie Oliver tells a story, and I bet you weren't expecting me to leap from the experiences of a working class lad with Tourette's to the experiences of a working class lad who is now one of the most famous people in the country. But Jamie Oliver tells a story about what would happen to him and his mate Jimmy, who you might also know from the telly, when they were at comprehensive school together in Essex. And every week or every few days, the special needs teacher, they were called special needs then, not special educational needs. Jamie's younger than me. When I was in that particular zone, I'm not even sure there was a catch-all term for it, an umbrella term for it. So Jamie would be taken out of class along with three or four other members of his class for remedial lessons, because he was extremely, and still is, he was severely dyslexic. And the kids in the class would sing, and they would sing the words special needs to the tune of Let It Be by the Beatles. When I told him that I knew that, he was a little bit freaked out. I think he'd forgotten that he mentioned it in an interview many years ago. And I was researching a Full Disclosure episode with him, and it wasn't Full Disclosure, I was researching an interview that I did with him some years ago, and it popped up in my research, and he thought I'd kind of, I don't know, gone back in time, or I'd been at school with him or something like that. But he'd shared this in an interview, and obviously subsequently the work he's done in the field of dyslexia in particular and special needs in general is like his work in the field of nutrition and food, and making sure that children whose parents don't understand the importance of a healthy diet at least have a chance of eating some healthy food in their lives. He's moved mountains in both of those sectors, but imagine what it would have been like back then. Some of my guests on Full Disclosure talk of being written off. I think the most moving recently was probably Brian Connolly. He's gone on to achieve everything from TV stardom to West End stardom, game shows, musicals, EastEnders. An absolute polymath, a genuine Renaissance man. There's nothing he can't do. But he had teachers who told him there was nothing that he could do. That he was thick. That he was destined for a life of indolence or irrelevance. haunted by that. Haunted for it by it for years. Never really, I don't think, move on entirely from the voice in your childhood that told you you were useless, that told you you were thick, that told you you were awful, or the friends who you'd be absolutely happy to knock about with at playtime, but who could cut right to the core of you when they joined in with the singing of special needs to the tune of Let It Be. The language we used in the playground. The language. I remember when Blue Peter raised an enormous sum of money for a disabled man called Joey Deacon. And his name, I don't think anybody could have seen this coming, although maybe they could. His name then became a playground insult because of his disability. So anyone who was a bit slow on the uptake or anyone who displayed what we would now call special educational needs would be insulted by being called by his name. A lovely man, incredible and inspiring story, but everybody did it. I think it's one of the reasons they renamed a society was because the word that was in the original title of the society had become a playground insult. Those were physical disabilities, not special educational needs. But I think that's a really crucial point as well. In that if they were visible conditions, I don't think even your average Daily Mail columnist would be writing an article about how they don't believe that it's true. We called it limping in my day. I don't know why these kids need crutches. We didn't have anything in my day. We called it limping. Which is, of course, how they used to talk about dyslexia, how they, until quite recently, talked about ADHD, how they continue to talk about other conditions of which they haven't heard. I'd read one at the weekend who was referencing a Caller to Nick's show, actually, where a mother had mustered up the courage to talk about the condition that her child had, and Amanda Platell in the Daily Mail decided that she was a liar and she was making it up and that it was not a case for support or help, but a case for dismissal and contempt, which is a position that you'd have to get up very early in the morning to muster up enough bile to pronounce upon with zero experience of any of these issues. So I want to know what it was like when you were growing up with what are now recognised as special educational needs. What it was like to be dyslexic in the 1970s, to have ADHD in the 1980s, to have oppositional defiance disorder. See, of course, some of the most extraordinary conversations that we've had in this field in recent years have involved late life diagnosis. People who, for example, have sent their son along to get an ADHD diagnosis and realise that this actually explains many of the things that have gone on in their life and the difference that a diagnosis can make, whether or not you get an EHCP, which provides a requirement for the school to offer all manner of support that they would not otherwise offer, it is moot. You will be living in the knowledge that you sat in classrooms not understanding what was going on, while also knowing that in some contexts you were not stupid. The autism spectrum disorder is something that has seen huge increases in diagnoses. I don't think anyone thinks there are more people with on the spectrum than there were when, well, some people probably think that, but I always remember a kid at my prep school who was fascinated by the laundry. We had a laundry at my school because it was a boarding school, and he would spend all of his spare time in the laundry watching the machines. I got a message the other day from a mum whose son is on the autism spectrum disorder who was telling me about the YouTube channel that he has focusing upon laundry machines. They have a peculiar fascination for some people, and those people have always been with us. But their situations, their conditions were not recognised and not properly looked after. So, 18 minutes after 10 is the time. In the course of today's programme, we'll find out a lot more about what the government is going to do, what the white paper is going to look like, what Bridget Phillipson is going to say in her speech. But I think that we're at a cusp together in society, and I want to phrase this correctly, because I didn't realise this was going to be the government's position this morning, and it tallies almost completely with what I've thought for some time they should do, and it is to recognise that special needs are not as special as they used to be, by which I mean the word special is used to apply to the minority. The minority is not as small as we used to think it was. It probably never has been. There might be some issues that are exacerbated by things like technology and diet pollution or modernity. I don't know. I don't know enough to comment on that. So I could never write columns for the Daily Mail about other people's children. But I do know that people have been growing up with most of these conditions for decades, even if we didn't have the names for them. And I want to know, I don't know, I know a bit, but I don't know everything about what that was like. So, before schools started providing special education needs provision, before schools started properly addressing what dyslexia was like, or Tourette's in the context of the film that we're talking about, what was it like? What was it like? Do you know the lad who said that probably these days would have been diagnosed with special, with some form of special educational needs, because he had that very literal way of thinking. If you don't know the story that leads up to the point where my old school friend, when we were about 11, asked a lecturer, what was it like, after a lecturer had spent an hour telling us what he thought it was like. He'd done an expedition up the Zambezi or something like that, and he came in with loads and loads of slides, and he showed us loads and loads of pictures. And none of us put our hands up at the end to ask a question, except this lad, who had his hand up from the very beginning. But the headmaster ignored him because he knew that the question would be, well, we'd have said then, dozy or dopey. Now I'd say left field. And the question was, what was it like? Because he wanted to know what it felt like. He didn't want to know how many crocodiles he saw, or in what year the English had discovered the river, or what discovered. The natives, of course, had known all along there was a river there, but some English bloke turned up and named it after Queen Victoria. So what was it like to grow up with what we would now call special educational needs, but which we didn't even necessarily have a name for then? Okay, 03456060973. And let me make one thing absolutely clear. If I haven't already, I will almost certainly get some of my words wrong. I'll get some of my understanding wrong. I'm pretty good on this. I'm better than most journalists, but I'm not a professional. I may have already misspoken. I may have already not just misattributed something, but misdescribed something. And that is part of the reason why we need to talk about it more. Because if you want to write columns for the Daily Mail, it's very important that you understand nothing. If you want to be a functioning and helpful part of our society and our community, it's very important that you try to understand more. 03456060973 is the number you need to tell me what it was like to go through school with special educational needs before we even recognized what they were. All right, it's 10:22. Hit the numbers now. You will get through.
LBC.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Your commute feels like it's taking forever. You're feeling crowded, and there's that nagging feeling that you just want to vape. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your day. Nicorette lozenges help fight vaping cravings and can be used anytime, anywhere. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Cool's Lozenge contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honeypot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX, What Car's Best Small SUV 2024 and 2025.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
24 minutes after 10. This is an early text to come in. My brother did fight. He fought against all of the people that told him he would never make anything of his life. Taught by our mum, he defied those who told him he would never be able to read. Abandoned by the traditional education system, he went to college to get technical qualifications. He ignored the name callers, the doubters, the people who prefer to look away, and he grafted just as much as I have, as a very successful person, every single day. And so I feel an immense personal sadness that in the end he did not quite achieve the level of basic comfort in his life that my parents and I want. I'm sorry, that's not a text. That's an article today written by the actual Prime Minister of the United Kingdom about his brother Nick, that he uses today to explain why he A, understands and B, passionately believes in the importance of improving the system. It's better than it was when Nick Starmer was growing up. Learning difficulties, the phrase, abandonment by the education system, the experience, but it's not as good as it could be or should be. And we're going to highlight that by looking back at what it was like in the 70s, the 80s, and even, I suspect, the 90s. The number you need to join in is the same as it always is. Luke is in Beckenham. Luke, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. Hello. Bit nervous, mate. I'm a massive fan.
It's only me.
Of yours.
It's only me.
I basically heard you describe something about 10 minutes ago, and you just described me. And it's been a tough sort of growing up with severe ADHD. I've got OCD. I've got Tourette's, non-verbal, thankfully, but very, very bad tics.
So that's like a physical jerk,
jerking. Yeah, it'll go through blinking. It will be clicks in my neck and turning, and and then later on in life, severe addiction. That's with spectrum. Though, everything from drink to drugs to sex to love to everything. So, so it's been tough, and it's not really been recognised until I went to get myself diagnosed sort of early 40s, because I have just had failure to launch. I've been around, I present as somebody who should be very successful. My friends all around me have been very successful in life. It shows the level of brightness I have to be mixing with a certain type, but just not being able to get there myself because of blocks in executive function and everything else.
You've got the technical understanding of what's going on then. Because the phrase,
absolutely.
Not to patronise you, but the phrase executive function speaks to knowledge and understanding of issues.
I've had to learn all my life.
That's what I presume.
To self-diagnose before I could go to get diagnosed, if you like.
Can I take you back to school? Can I take you back? Because that's what I want today's conversation to be about. And you're right, for the record, you do present as highly articulate and intelligent and informed. But failure to launch is a phrase that I'll take away from today's show.
Yeah.
Wherever it goes next. But let's go back to school. What happened at school?
I used to mess around because it was my way of getting around the fact that I just could not concentrate. You know, my teachers would explain to me that, you know, things, and it would just literally bounce off of my head. And I'd be looking at them thinking, why is this information not going? I knew that something was wrong. So what I used to do to overcompensate the fact that I wasn't there to learn was just mess around. And I become the class clown, and because of that, the teachers knew I was disrupting the whole class, so they would say, go and put your headphones on, Luke, put your Walkman on, go and sit at the back, colour in, do a crossword, just don't want to hear anything from you.
Wow.
And that is what went on from about the first year of secondary school. I was that was my experience of school. And look, I had a great time at school. I loved it because nothing was expected of me. They didn't ever ask me about, have I done my homework? Have I done my coursework? Because they knew I hadn't. They knew I wouldn't have done it. So it was just a case of, it just wasn't known, Nick. So they'd get my parents in and say exactly what I've just said to you. You know, he's a really bright boy. We don't understand why he's not getting on. Why doesn't
he? How did they know you were bright? From the way you spoke and the way you communicated?
I guess so, yeah.
And also, probably, if you were the class clown, comedy is an intelligence, isn't it? There's a lot of good lines, quick wits. We call them quick wits for a reason.
Yeah.
But it would never translate into the schoolwork you could do.
I tell people about the fact that I was asked to leave school, and they go, leave? You was asked to leave? You mean you was expelled? I said, no, literally, they asked me to leave.
So just get out of the way.
I was sitting in class in the last year, and my friend patted me on the shoulder. He goes, your mum and dad are here. and they were at the door, and I went, what are you doing here? And they went, you come here. And I went up, and they just said, look, you're a really nice guy, and blah, 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 but you're just disrupting the whole school. You need to, you're going to have to go.
How old are you now?
I'm going to be 47 this year.
Okay, so you're right on the cusp of when it started a little later to be taken a little bit more seriously.
That's right.
What that line you said, and a lot of love coming in for you. I just want you to know that. And a lot of people saying, this is me. A lot of people saying, I wouldn't have the guts to ring him, but Luke is me. Nothing was ever expected of you. What does that do to a person?
It was just. I mean, when it's your lived experience and you don't know anything else, because you can only really go on what's going on in your head in your life.
Yes.
Then you know, you've got nothing to really bounce it off. You know what I mean? I was just so confused at the whole school experience. Like I didn't know what I was doing there. I didn't know why I was there. And it just felt confusing the whole time, you know. And so I didn't think, I just didn't question it, James. I just thought, you know, there was other kids like me at my school, so I became friends with them. And we became very disruptive. We became, you know, some of them were really naughty. Yeah. Some of them were what you might class as bad. I was never quite like that, but I used to hang around with that set, you know. And luckily, I was quite popular, so I just used to just go to school and just have fun. I did go to school literally to have fun.
Where are we now? How are you doing now?
I'm all right. I've got myself a small business, but again, I've just essentially given myself a job instead of building it into a business. And I've just recently decided that I want to get into be a counsellor, so that to help people like me, because I understand about it and I've got the lived experience, I want to go through the educational process of becoming a counsellor to try and help people like me. But it cost a lot of money, and it's going to take a bit of time. And also, because of the educational blockages I've had, I realise it's going to be quite painful.
You might not have the grades that you need in certain areas.
Maybe,
good luck, seriously.
Thanks,
this one here, we don't normally do surnames when they come in via text, but I think it would be inappropriate of me not to on this one. And Chris has been in touch, and he's just used a lot of exclamation marks and a lot of capital letters. Chris Jones, out! Was pretty much every single lesson.
Yeah,
so he was getting chucked out of the classroom.
100%.
You were getting stuck in the corner with your headphones.
My best friend still does an impression of our German teacher. He used to literally just say, look, get out every single lesson. And at one time, I asked somebody for a pen because I didn't have a pen.
And that was enough.
And that was the start.
Because you were a marked man. You were a marked man.
Exactly.
That was so helpful. And I hope this doesn't sound patronising. Well done, seriously, overcoming what you've already overcome, and a sense in all of your conversation that you're going to overcome more as the years move forward. But that phrase, failure to launch, is the second most poignant phrase I can associate with this conversation at the moment. There's one that I don't think Luke actually used, but I've heard it used many times in the context of all of these conditions. ADHD, ADD, ODD, dyslexia. I don't know literally what where Tourette's fits into any of this conversation, but it is a diagnosis, and it clearly is something that leads people to disrupt class. But there's another phrase. I'll tell you what it is after the headlines, because it, to me, cuts to the absolute heart of everything. But before that, Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has admitted the current system for supporting children with special educational needs does not work. The government is about to set out plans to make provision in England more inclusive. A public inquiry has started into the Nottingham stabbings in June 2023. Two students and a school caretaker were killed by Valdo Calicane, who'd been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia 3 years prior to the attack. And further searches of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's former home in Windsor are expected to be made by police. The former prince was arrested last week on suspicion of misconduct in public office. LBC weather: heavy rain will continue for northern and western areas. Some sunny spells further south and in the east. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Rob, he's in the supermarket when his phone bleeps. It's his daughter. She's in Manchester, at uni. The message is short. She's happy. And just like that, Rob knows every penny he invested and saved was worth it. He texts her back. Heart emoji. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Rob's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Fly into flip-flop mode. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 10:36, and it is this phrase that cuts to the heart of these conversations and actually distills the cruelty and ignorance of commentators who don't know what they're talking about. It's when a child is in absolute despair and surveys the problems that they currently have, surveys the burdens that they are bearing, surveys their own perceived failure, and the crucial word there is perceived failure, to behave, to understand, to do their homework, to get out of the house, and it sounded a bit Canadian then, I don't know quite what I have, to get out of the house and go to school. Their perceived failure to do all of those things. You haven't done your work. You haven't left the house. You haven't understood. You haven't... They can't help it. And when the child says to the parent, I can't help it, they are describing something that is not susceptible to Trevor Phillips writing in the Times about how people need to be more resilient, or Amanda Platel writing in the Daily Mail about how a mother who rang LBC last week is making up conditions because I, as someone who has no understanding whatsoever of any of these issues, am adamant that I understand more about it than the professionals do. School refusal, very unhelpful phrase. Watch a child try to drag themselves out of bed and go to school. Try, get to the door, and then be overcome by unbearable angst, existential angst, suicidal ideation, all manner of horrors. And then their parents open their morning newspaper and read someone with zero experience of any of these issues telling them that they just need to eat less and exercise more. Oh, no, sorry, that's eating disorders. They just need to pull their socks up and develop a stiff upper lip. It's heartbreaking. And as with everything else in our society that demands empathy and compassion, if there are a couple of people somewhere swinging the lead, then why on earth would you let them define your attitude to all of the thousands and thousands of children who aren't? Because I'll tell you something for nothing. There's not a single family who've managed to secure an EHCB in this country at this time fraudulently. There just isn't. It would be impossible to do, as anyone would know if they took even the vaguest effort to understand the issues. Neil is in Weston-super-Mare as we return to the question of what it was like growing up with conditions that we have only relatively recently recognised and still don't look after properly. Neil, what would you like to say?
Everything that I said before, it resonates very much with me. I didn't get my diagnosis of ADHD until I was in my 30s. It made a lot of things click. I'm almost 50 now. and uniquely married a social worker, run my own social care company working with people with ADHD and autism. But the isolation that I had growing up, the feeling of failure, the feeling, I internalized it rather than externalized it. So I became depression in me, the feeling that I was weird, I was different. My school reports were always, why is Neil not doing so much better? He's obviously bright, you know, he can manage these. And there were certain subjects that I excelled in, and I concentrated on those, the single-minded focus, you know, which is a superpower in ADHD.
Of course.
You know, that was what I would concentrate on, and I just disregarded anything else. And it was just the things that I couldn't do that I was judged on, not necessarily the things that I could do.
Well, that would make it worse, because if you could do something, then the fact that you couldn't do something else would mean, in the minds of your teachers, that you wouldn't do it. You were choosing not to do it. In other words, you could help it when you knew somewhere inside, even as a tiny boy, you knew you couldn't help it.
Absolutely, and it would, I would just get labelled as lazy, because I wasn't concentrating on those things, you know. And you know, I chose certain types of friends. I fleeted between. I mean, I was severely bullied for multiple things when I wasn't at school. Well, thank you, James. But actually, it did give me drive. I've still got trauma from that bullying, but it gave me drive later in life.
You want to prove people wrong, don't you? It's a very strange engine, that, but I do understand it.
Yeah, and still to this day, it still drives me, you know. And, you know, and the only thing I will say to people that have got ADHD is lean into the things you can do.
Well, and also take advantage as much as you can of the new schemes that the government is poised to put in place that it's announcing today, money for nurseries. And in a way, the phrase I've got, and I don't know if it's going to be one that sustains, because it may be inaccurate or unfair or inappropriate, but it's that we need to recognise that special needs aren't that special. That there are way more people than we've ever fully acknowledged. It's a bit like dyslexia 20 years ago. Yeah. Now we're looking at a whole gamut of conditions and recognizing what you said about internalizing it. So if you externalize it, I'm just checking that I've understood you correctly, then you become the troublemaker. Then you become the naughty boy, the mischief maker, the delinquent. If you internalize it, then you kind of disappear. You become depressed. You become lonely. You become the victim of bullies. You become all the things that you've described, but it's actually driven by the same thing.
Very much so.
I've not thought of that. Yeah. Thank you.
No. It became, you know, self-harm, you know.
I know you're dealing with it, but I'm still sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
Because you're a human being and you deserve sympathy if you've been pushed into those situations by an absence of understanding and an absence of empathy. So you end up hating yourself.
Yeah, completely. And comparing yourself against people who don't have those troubles. And that was what I spent most of my adult life up until that point of getting a diagnosis and getting that sense of acceptance.
At a simple level, if every school has a place, whether it's a person or a classroom or both, where you are reminded and told and assured that you're not weird, you might be different, but you're not inferior. You're not the fact that you can't do this, but you can do this doesn't mean that you're bad or mad or sad. You're being measured on a metric that doesn't fit your skills. And that is how schools can change the world for children like you.
One of the things I would add into that is I would stay away from, because you see this in with things like sensory places.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have somewhere special you can go for it. It should be everywhere.
Built in. You're absolutely right.
Because otherwise you're isolating people.
You're right. It's like that thing about Jamie, Oliver. I mean, they all start singing special needs. So make it less special. I actually said the words and then went straight down the path of having a special route. Make it less special. Make it integrated. Make it part of mainstream schooling. And guess what the headline is on the Times article today that sits alongside incredibly powerful piece by Keir Starmer about his late brother Nick? The headline is "Mainstream Schools to Play Bigger Special Needs Role." And if they get it right, it changes not just the lives of boys like the one Neil used to be, it changes society for the better. It creates functional contributors out of people who would otherwise have been alienated and or abandoned. And by contributors, I don't just mean tax, although that might well be part of it. I mean everything else, engagement, integration, all of that. Good people with so much to offer who are told from the age of about 8 or 9, and certainly from 11 when they get to secondary school, that they're mad, bad and dangerous to know. It's 10:45. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We should get some more detail on this in the course of the next hour or so. And Natasha is at the speech that Bridget Phillipson is giving. I've got Keir Starmer's article for the Times in front of me that talks about investing in include. There it is. This hasn't happened to me for a long time. You've heard the same two calls on the show that I've heard. And the government is actually addressing. It's as if they'd listened to this programme and all the other programmes we've done in this area. They don't need to, because, of course, Keir Starmer has lived it, and they'll be taking advice from much better qualified people than me. But here's the line. We are also investing in inclusion. What did Neil just say? And I suggested lazily a special room you can go to where everyone will tell you you're okay. That's not inclusion. That's exclusion. That's seclusion. 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 Pronounce it however you want. That's not inclusion. Keir Starmer writing in the Times today, we are investing in inclusion, in teacher training, early intervention, extra teaching assistance, and above all in send support that is more personalised to an individual child's needs. And then he addresses, of course, the fear that always comes with change. He writes, I think when parents see this new system in action, they will support it. But I recognise that change on this scale will take time, and I want to take parents with us. After all, raising the future of our country is always a partnership between parents and the state. There is, of course, a third way, in which case you just badger government ministers for not providing the details, the confidential details of the white paper all morning, instead of actually looking at what lies behind the policy, both on a personal and a political level. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I can't help but feel that the carefully crafted mystique around the British royal family is falling away pretty quickly. And what we are left with better resembles the kind of smug, arrogant self-indulgence of people who are cloistered in a world that is largely make-believe.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add 2 beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life. Giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of 2 and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready?
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I can't help it. I can't help it. Do you know what else they used to do? You probably know this, but I wonder whether you've knitted it into the conversations you've heard about special educational needs in the current day. In our times, you used to strap your hand behind your back if you were left-handed. If you favoured your left hand, the word for sinister comes from the Latin for left. If you favoured your left hand, which is genetic, then they would strap it behind your back so you would learn to do things with your right hand. Because, you know, they hate difference, don't they? Well, who's they? I don't know. You can't blame this one on the fascists. Have a quick listen to this. I'm minded to stay with this subject for a little longer than the first hour of the programme, because it's one of the most important conversations society can have. One of the most important things I attempt, this is from a mother, one of the most important things I attempt to get across with any new teachers my son might encounter is impulse control and movement breaks. The overwhelming majority of his teachers so far have recognised the involuntary nature of some of his needs, which is a slightly fancy-schmancy way of saying I can't help it, the involuntary nature of some of his needs. If you spend enough time with him, you can see the movement building up inside him. At this age, nowadays, a short walk to the library and back will sort it out. Once you know him, you can tell the difference between him being naughty and deserving a telling and the blurting out that he sometimes cannot help. Attention-catching redirect. Let him apologise for disruption and process his thoughts into a more proper form. Or stick him in headphones in the corner of the class and ask him to leave school early. It's that simple. It's inclusion or exclusion, or seclusion. Those are the three clusions. Exclusion, inclusion, seclusion. What should the government be doing? Anthony's in Brighton. Anthony, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hi, mate.
Yeah, I guess I feel like I wanted to call in a lot of times on the subject of special needs, because my son is 6 years old and he's diagnosed with autism, has an EHCP, but also I'm 56 years old. And I'm dyslexic, and I got diagnosed when I was maybe 16.
Right.
But I had a very similar experience where I remember with my father when I was about 9, maybe being told off for an hour because I didn't realise there was a difference. I thought there was the word down, D-O-W-M and D-O-W-N. But my dyslexic brain, I couldn't see the difference between the two things. So I was told from a very young age that I was thick and stupid, and I used to be the class clown as well. So listening to Neil and Luke earlier on the call, it's been quite triggering, actually.
I mean, I'm sorry about that, but also I know that you recognise that there's purpose in this and goodness in what has triggered you, because for an awful lot of people it's an exercise in illumination. Did your dad think he could shout you into understanding?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a typical kind of 1960s dad, and he couldn't understand. He was neurotypical, and he couldn't understand how I could be anything different to him. It's a bit maybe similar to your schooling education, where you had trauma in your school, and yet you kind of, it took you years to adulthood to really deal with it.
Yeah.
With me, it was really until I started to, even though I got diagnosed when I was 16, it didn't really land with me what dyslexia meant, because it was about, I got it just before my O-levels, so,
right.
And it really didn't make a difference to me. It was only when I started working, probably into my 20s or 30s, that I suddenly realised, actually, no, it's a real strength in some ways, but in some ways it's something you've got to be aware of. But I think the key thing is kind of that thing where I did that thing of speaking to my little childhood version of me and was able to say, it's not my fault.
You're not
and that
sick.
Was a really powerful
You're not
moment.
Stupid.
Yeah.
You're not naughty. You're none of the things that you were spent your entire life being told that you were. How different is it for your boy, given the 50 years almost exactly between you?
So he's amazing. He's 6. He's now, he's got a 2-to-1 sort of special teaching assistant direct for him.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. His school he goes to is amazing. They really cater for the needs. And about 9 o'clock in the morning, where most kids go in at 8:45, you will see a whole bunch of kids who've got the number of things you said today about who have got various concerns where they can't go into school at the same time. The school caters for it incredibly well. But to give you a view, speech and language, my son's speech is one of his big, he's got probably verbal dyspraxia.
Right.
So he struggles with making words. And the difficulty with that is if you can't make certain sounds, you can't be understood. If you can't be understood, people stop listening to you or they don't listen to you. So we've known this since he was about two or three, and you could have some of the staff at nursery going, yeah, he doesn't speak very much. We're going, what are you talking about? He speaks loads at home, but because he couldn't be understood, people just don't listen to him. So his speech and language, he had a speech and language session with a SALT professional in the start of this term, and they said, yes, that's really great, his speech and language is coming on, we'll book him another session in the summer term. It's like, what are you talking about? So this whole thing today with the news, I really welcome it, but I do worry, whenever I've had meetings with local authorities or I've always said, the phrase I've always said is, are we putting Remy, my son, are we putting him at the centre of this? Are we making decisions based upon his needs, or are we making decisions based upon cost or money or what's easy?
They'll have to be a balance, won't they?
Yeah.
But you're right. And of course, if the thing that Bridget Phillipson is announcing now is fit for purpose, and I think you'd have to be nuts to not to hope that it is.
Yeah.
Then it would not be. It would be more integrated. It would be more permanent, rather than being one of these things that come around once in a blue moon. It would be a permanent part of care for boys like yours. I mean, we just have to hope, don't we, that the words that they're suggesting so far, or the things that Keir Starmer is writing about today, will be reflected in what is actually announced, what is actually in the white paper. Anthony, thank you. I don't know. I'm not going to do Idiot's Corner at this point in the programme, but the question about why is it so bad here, why is it an epidemic in this country, it's just not true. I mean, you can find it's really easy. It's extraordinary, isn't it? I don't know whether anyone goes on far-right Twitter anymore, unless they're masochists or far-right, but you see people saying things on there that you can check with the most simple Google, and it just isn't true. You want to look at autism rates per 100,000 of the population. The idea that the United Kingdom has a particular epidemic or issue with this is just, it's pants, to coin a phrase. It's demonstrable nonsense. I don't even know where, you have to go so far down the list even to find us that I don't even know where the idea would come from. Countries that are way ahead of us, Brunei, Singapore, Japan, South Korea, Uganda, Iceland, Canada, Sweden, and on it goes. But I don't know. I guess it's a reluctance to believe that it's true. This is what Amanda Patel wrote in the Daily Mail on Saturday. She said her daughter suffers from, wait for it, this was a call to LBC, this was a mother who'd found the confidence to ring in, and I'm sure Nick was empathetic and compassionate with her, but not Amanda Patel. Wait for it, she writes, emotional-based school avoidance due to high levels of anxiety. Yes, such a, quote, syndrome exists, and we taxpayers stump up for it, although in the old days we called it bunking off school. No, bunking off school is what happens when you can help it. The disorder that this child suffers from is what happens when you would rather cut yourself open with a blade than go to school. That's the difference between what is going on in these two situations. Bunking off school is what people who could easily go to school but have just decided that today they don't want to. Emotional-based school avoidance due to high levels of anxiety is when, for reasons that the experts struggle to understand but happily can treat, you find the idea of going to school terrifying in the way that the rest of us would find being Amanda Platel terrifying. That's the difference. And it is unspeakably, unbelievably unhelpful when people who are writing newspaper articles or presenting programs revel in their ignorance and their cruelty. If you have ever seen a child or spoken to a parent whose child has gone through this process, You don't even question the idea that it's a game of choice. A game of choice. Of course we want him to go to school, but he's cut himself again because he thinks we're going to make him. Oh, we called it bunking off school in my day. just a few razor blades. I'm not even exaggerating. I have personal experience of precisely that scenario with someone I know, the son of someone I know extremely well. But we call it bunking off school. Absolute monsters. Jade's in Oxford. Jade, what would you like to say?
I would just like to say that, you know, I work as a teacher and I'm autistic and I've got ADHD and my kids are in the same situation. And, it is scary, hearing what the government are talking about. But I think unless there's significant training and just understanding how complex any single one class is these days, there's no amount of money that's going to make that a softer place for kids like mine or kids like I was. I suppose that's what I wanted to say.
Well, the money is to be spent on the training. So, as Starmer says in this article in the Times today, it's not going to be easy, but be patient and come with us. If they don't spend the money on training, it's hard to imagine what else they are going to spend it on. But a whole restructuring of... I don't think anyone would argue about the need for root and branch improvement, would they?
No, I mean,
it's just the scepticism about politicians being the people that can deliver it. Unfortunately, there's no one else who can.
No, it is, but 80% of my young people have special needs, and I'm just one teacher that understands how to make that place safer. The reality is it better in 2026 compared to when I was left in a playground alone for years because I didn't speak? No, it's not better now. No, no, it's not.
Even though we now have teaching assistants and we have special educational needs provision and we have EHCPs. And surely your experience would have been better if you'd had the equivalent then of an EHCP, but I don't want to argue with you.
I see my two children who have been, they're resilient little chaps.
Yeah.
But I also hold them each night crying because they have to decompress from their day.
Masking.
And that's just a reality. And just as one teacher who knows how not to screw up a piece of paper because it triggers one child, that's not ECHP stuff. That's not training stuff. It's much deeper than that. And it's really teacher dependent on whether our young people survive or thrive.
It's just it's the anti-Victorian. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just the, that if you take they should be seen and not heard, or we just called it bunking off, or they need to toughen up. You take that and park it over there on one side of the story. And then on the other side, it is most of the time, almost all of the time, these children are telling us grown-ups the truth. They're telling us it's unbearable. They're telling us they can't do this. They're telling us this. They would rather hurt themselves than do that thing that we found easy when we were their age. Therefore, we presume it's easy for them as well.
We do, and it's heartbreaking. Both of my children have told me they don't want to be on the planet at different times because they've been bullied and they're 7 and 10.
And they can't help whatever it is that marks them out in the playground as in the way that you were marked out by, forgive me if I get the language wrong, but what sounds like situational mutism.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Oh, we called it being, what would Amanda Platel write in next week's Daily Mail? We called it being quiet in our day.
I was quiet and daydreaming. Yeah. And as long as I was in the library hiding, I wasn't a problem.
It's called, wait for it, situational mutism. And it's
there
funded by us, the taxpayer. We called it being quiet in our day. It's just unbelievable how ignorant these people are. And so unhelpful, because the government has to wade through that on its way to this, and this is the speech that Bridget Phillipson is currently giving that we'll find out more about shortly. Thank you, Jade. Thank you. And not just for your contribution, but also for the work that you do and the understanding you will bring to a situation that is willfully misunderstood by people who are paid to provide their readers and their listeners ostensibly, laughably, with a better understanding of complicated subjects. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the government is announcing major reforms to England's special educational needs system. It'll see mainstream schools given extra funding to help them support more SEND pupils. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
From 2029, a new system will force all schools to provide legal help for all their pupils. Ministers want more children to be educated within mainstream schools rather than feel forced to travel to special educational needs schools, possibly hundreds of miles away. In the next 4 years, the government say they'll put more than £4 billion into more funding for mainstream schools in a bid to get them ready.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told LBC that her party will scrutinise the plans closely, but that she has concern the reforms will dilute provisions for those who need them the most.
I think a lot of parents try to do what is best for their children. They've been told that this is the route. The assessments are carried out by professionals. I am more worried, actually, by what Labour did in the budget, where they took out the money for special educational needs from councils, about £6 billion, and now what's coming back in is £4 billion.
A public inquiry has started into the Nottingham stabbings in June 2023. Two students and a school caretaker were killed by Valdo Calacane, who'd been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia 3 years prior to the attack. The Prince of Wales says he needs to be in a calm state to watch the film Hamlet, saying that I'm not at the moment. William made the comments at the BAFTA Film Awards days after Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's arrest. His uncles previously denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Hundreds of people in Perthshire are being told their tap water is still not safe to drink or cook with 4 days after a fuel spillage. Diesel is believed to have entered the river supplying the village of Killin after an attempted robbery at a petrol station. Scottish Water says it is now safe for bathing and washing laundry. And a state of emergency has been declared in New York City due to a major winter storm hitting the US's northeast. Airlines have cancelled thousands of flights because of heavy snow and strong winds. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up a point at 10,688. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, heavy rain will continue for northern and western areas. Some sunny spells further south and in the east, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
JP Morgan Personal Investing gives you the clarity to make more informed decisions on your investments, which is great because right now something else just became crystal clear. Your kid just outgrew the kids menu. Now he's ordering a truffle gnocchi. You consider making a don't gnocchi it till you try it joke, but now's not the time. Now's the time to grow his world, one bite at a time. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 11 is the time. Stay on this because it's such a wonderful, forgive me for using that word, but it is a wonderful way into this subject. The world seems to be full sometimes of people who revel in not understanding things, doesn't it? And yet, if you want to understand special educational needs today, have a little look at what happened yesterday. If you're an idiot, you'll say, we called it bunking off in my day. If you're possessed of a scintilla of compassion or empathy or intelligence, or ideally all three, you will realise that we were all at school, even if we weren't affected by this ourselves, even if we were neurotypical or we didn't have any special educational needs. We were all at school, depending on your age, with people who did and who were, as a consequence, either bullied or alienated or excluded or ignored or a combination of all of the above. That's just not an opinion, is it? It's just counting. You can probably think of the kid now. I mean, I told you a few times of the boy at my school, bright as a button, absolutely glued to the washing machines and the tumble dryers in the school laundry. Every break, he would go there like a man on a mission. He'd walk there like absolutely like an arrow from a bow, and he would stay there for as long as he possibly could. And we were, I mean, baffled by it. What does he do in there? The laundry lady used to smoke quite heavily, so for a while we thought he was nicking buttons from her ashtray and smoking those. Because another lad, one of the other lads, it turned out, had developed a bit of a sideline in smoking the laundry lady's buttons. But no, he just loved to watch them. And, you know, we didn't know the name of that condition then. And I don't think we bullied him for it. I didn't. I don't remember him as being a boy who was on the receiving end of cruelty, but a lot of boys were, and almost certainly some of them would have been. I mean, the teachers, if you were dyslexic, which was just becoming a thing back then. I remember a lad who couldn't do exams. The anxiety that would consume him was something that I could not conceive of. I was the opposite. I was one of those kids who could never knuckle down in class, probably as a consequence of a neurodiversity, but I haven't formalised that. But I could do exams, I could hyper-focus, forget it all 10 minutes after coming out of the exam hall, but get a good grade for the hour or the 2 hours that I spent in it. But there was this one lad, I can see him now, I remember his name, be entirely inappropriate to say it, and we must have bullied him. Because he got a free pass, he didn't have to do exams, or he was allowed to do them at home. I forget exactly what the details were, but that would be one of those anxiety disorders that Daily Mail columnists will be queuing up to pretend are invented. That what they should have done with that child who would start hitting himself in the face with a clenched fist on the way into exam halls, which didn't, I'm happy to say, didn't make us laugh. It made us absolutely terrified. We freaked us all out. But that is, of course, if you were a Daily Mail columnist, you'd be adamant that that's not a real condition, or that the child just needed a punch. The child who is punching themselves in the face because they're so terrified of going into an exam hall needs some physical discipline. To be fair to my school, when we were beaten a lot for all sorts of transgressions, some imagined, he was treated with calmness and respect because he was such a good boy the rest of the time. If it had been me, if it had been me, they'd have beaten me for it. But he was such a good boy. He must have been telling the truth when he couldn't go into the exam. Just thinking out loud, just realising the sort of lads that would not have been given the benefit of the doubt because they'd already been beaten 5 times that term for various other things, some of which would probably be these days attributed to neurodiversity or special educational needs. Gosh. So, you want to understand why what the government is announcing today is of paramount importance, then you need to understand what used to happen. Not what happens now, which is suboptimal, but what used to happen. Because if ever there is an irresistible argument for change and improvement, it would be what happened to you. What happened to John McDonald when he had Tourette's at his school in Galashiels, where he got beaten for swearing and then beaten again for swearing at the man who beat him for swearing. A process over which he had absolutely no control. The thing's going up on the school notice board. Bottom of the class, bottom of the class, bottom of the class. Must try harder, must try harder, must try harder. Can't get their head around. So why is he doing so brilliantly at maths when he can't do history? But there's probably a reason that is not laziness or lack of intelligence. So what happened to you? And very simply, when you were at school during an era in which these conditions were all treated with the sort of ignorant contempt that Amanda Platel treats the one that she heard on this radio station last week. What was it like when they didn't know? I mean, what was it like? I mean, asthma, actually, had been around since ancient Egypt. But could you imagine? Left-handedness is a great example. Asthma. We just called it wheezing in my day. I don't know why these... And, you know, their inhalers are paid for by taxpayers for all these wheezy children. It's the equivalent of that. It's absolutely the equivalent of that. And some people are just too thick to see it. Sam's in Penryn in Cornwall. Do you know, just a complete non sequitur, Sam, which you'll indulge because you've got no choice, it being my show and all, but the school I'm talking about, where I used to get beaten regularly, was originally called Penryn, named after the town where you're calling me from, although it was nowhere near Cornwall, so I never really got to the bottom of why. But that is a digression too far, Sam. What made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James, mate. How are you?
Very well.
I'm a bit ADHD. I've not taken my meds, to bear with.
Okay.
So I'm 24 years old now. So I got diagnosed with dyslexia when I was 7, so just before austerity kicked in.
Oh, yes.
And then austerity kicked in. And I was taken out of, you know, I think of myself as being relatively smart. Yeah. But my ability to, like, reading comprehension and the ability to spell handwriting, which is called dysgraphia, which is sort of a separate thing but commonly associated with dyslexia, it's awful. Like, really, I just can't do it. And so I was taken out of being in classes with my mates, and I was taken aside, and I...
This is even 10 years ago, or less.
Yeah. And I read books about, I don't know, a big dog or whatever. And even in secondary school, like, right up until I did my GCSEs in 2018,
yeah,
I wasn't allowed to watch the film Romeo and Juliet because I didn't think I could understand it. So I had to watch Romeo and Juliet, the one about the gnomes.
I mean, it's a good film, don't get me wrong, but I can't imagine it was much help to your GCSE Shakespeare.
No, I mean, it's just, it's humiliating. That's the problem. So there was a study into shame. And the level of shame a child feels when they can't complete a sort of an academic task like reading or writing.
We call it being lazy. We call it being lazy in my day.
Yeah, well, that's the level of shame felt is equivalent to the shame felt if you engage in incest.
Well, you don't know that, I hope.
Well, no, that's what the studies show.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were just giving me a sort of slightly...
No, I'm not riffing.
Slightly infelicitous figure of speech there. So I suppose control is moot in this kind of conversation. Can you describe... can you put that shame into words? To someone who has no idea what you're talking about, how would you describe it?
Well, I learnt to lie pretty quickly. I just pretend I understood something because the sort of... embarrassed. It's also the punishment, like not being able to go out to play at lunch because you'd have to carry on working because everybody thought you were lazy. Mm. And so I guess you call it masking. I learned to lie about understanding stuff, which I still do now, even at work. It's not like a voluntary thing. It's just an immediate reflex. Do you understand this? Yeah. And then I'll like scrabble about later and try and figure it out.
Because you just want to move the spotlight away
to
somewhere else. And what understanding do you have of the why of it when you're younger? I mean, you're still pretty young now, but you watch other children not struggle with the things that you find almost impossible. And you know, even now, you're in a context or an environment where people think you are being willful. Not that you are, you know, like someone with a bad leg limping. They think you are being willful in your failure, to use that word, to grasp what everybody else finds easy to grasp. What do you think is going on?
Well, I understood it as soon as I was diagnosed. So I didn't understand it until I was 7, and I used to come home and be very upset that I couldn't do the basic things that everybody else could.
Mm.
But after I got my diagnosis, I understood, because I'm currently doing a master's in illustration. I'm very good at drawing, and so I'd always say, like, well, why can't you draw? I can't tell the time on a traditional clock even now. But
really, just the hands just makes no sense to you. What do you see when you look at it?
Oh, it's like alchemy. It's mad.
Some mad lines. Well, what's that all about? And all these numbers. Are they in any order to you, the numbers?
They're in order. Right. The sort of the jiggly text is a bit of a misconception. When you see sort of jiggly text written down, that's a sort of a simulation of how hard it is rather than what we possibly see.
I understand.
It's misconception, but like a lot of people make it. It's mad. It's like alchemy. But then people can't understand how I can draw. And so I was sort of able to reverse engineer that process. But I had teachers, because my handwriting's very bad, and I had teachers saying, well, you can draw, but why can't you write nicely? And I say, well, you can write nicely, but why can't you draw?
Oh, well done. Oh, I like that. I bet you probably got a proverbial slap for that from certain teachers, didn't you? I mean, it's a good comeback. I should really have grown out of it by now, Sam. I'm over twice your age, but I am a huge fan of the sassy comeback to a teacher who doesn't deserve your respect. I'll give you one of mine because you just gave me one of yours. I remember being stopped in the corridor by a teacher who was one of those hideous characters that wanted to be friends with a certain group of boys. He wanted to be in with the rugby team rather than actually in an authority figure. And I can't remember what I was wearing, something ridiculous, no doubt. And he stopped me in the corridor and he said, does your housemaster allow you to walk around dressed like that? And I said, well, he's not asked me to get undressed yet, so would you like me to? And he goes, well, you're bloody lucky I don't teach you. And I said, yes, I am, sir. I'm hoping to get some A-levels. And enough lads heard for me to be high-fived all the way back to the classroom. But in those moments, if you are the, quotes, naughty, end quotes, boy, in those moments, your heart's going, no one knows on the outside. They just think you're like a rebel without a cause or a rebel with a cause. But on the inside, your heart's going 10 to the dozen. You don't, you know, you're frightened. You're a child pretending you're a grown-up. But that's why I'm still a fan of the sassy comeback. It's 11:18.
This is LBC.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in-store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data 2H2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 20 minutes after 11. I'm going to run through a few texts. Claire in Dagenham, Martin in Bedford. I'll be with you when I can, I promise. But some people, for reasons that I'm sure I don't need to explain, have an awful lot to contribute to programmes like this one, but won't always be in the mood to ring in. I don't think Mark's in that category, but this text just absolutely got me, because I just got him. James, you've just shocked me. You brought back something I hadn't thought about in nearly 50 years. I was 12 in 1977, first year at secondary school, the point where they split us into sets. And there was this practice, I won't name the school, where you can tell he's posh, immediately there. If you hadn't gone to a private school, it wouldn't cross your mind that if you named it, well, I could be wrong. Anyway, but at the end of term, certain boys were called to the front and handed a brown envelope. This is in front of an entire school. Everyone knew what it meant. Inside was the letter saying they wouldn't be staying in the academic sets. They would be moved out for special support. Now, the support itself may well have been right, but the way it was done, James, I can still see it. There was one boy, a lovely lad, a real gentle giant, kind, respectful, properly brought up. He was called up, given the envelope, and then had to walk back to his seat past the rest of us. And I remember it so clearly, the tears just running down his face as he sat back at his desk, trying to hold it together in front of the whole class. It stayed with me, even if I had buried it, until now. These are children. They have feelings. They deserve care, discretion, and simple courtesy in how such moments are handled. 1977, nearly 50 years ago. I very much hope we do it better today. That's from Mark in Milton Keynes, who will never get a job on the Daily Mail, because if you want to write a column for the Daily Mail, you have to insist that the way we did it then was the right way and the only way. And all the rest is just, I don't know, cotton wool, cosseting nonsense. God. And listen, confession time, I loved that system. I never gave a thought to the kids who were the victims of the system that I was a beneficiary of. It could cover up a whole term of not having done much by smashing an exam. And then there's the kid who couldn't get into the exam hall, even though he was at least, I think he'd come higher than me in class. and they added up the results of the whole term, he'd leave me in a cocked hat, but he couldn't get through the door of the exam room. What was it like back in the day? And the way that you answer that question explains why the government is trying with no guarantees that they will succeed, but trying to tear up the current system and start all over again, or at least to introduce some epic improvements to the system that's in place. Claire's in Dagenham. Claire, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning.
Hello, Claire.
Hi. Just listening to this kind of triggered, brought me back to my childhood. So I've got ADHD, and I was diagnosed when I was 37.
Right.
And I'm 42 now, so it's just a few years. But when I was at school, I didn't know I had ADHD,
no,
obviously.
Of course.
So I was very... I want to say I was told I was, you know, badly behaved,
yes.
Couldn't focus, don't listen, you know, all these things. And I got finally got expelled in year 9, so I was, what, 13?
Right.
And then no other school would take me because I was so badly behaved.
Oh, wow.
I only went back to school in year 11, so all I was right. 15. And I had just to sit my GCSEs, which I failed. Obviously.
Oh, you haven't been in school for 2 years.
Right. So I failed. So to this day, funny enough, I say it's funny, I have no GCSEs. However, I've got 2 degrees and I'm a counsellor. I work as a counsellor. Mm. Work with young people in college, that suffer mental health challenges.
Well, how did you get back on the education horse?
I always wanted to be a teacher. I knew I wanted to be a teacher. So my career was teaching for many right. years, and I was told you can't teach, you have no, you know, you haven't yeah. got GCSEs, you know, you're not smart enough, and, you know, they said it back in the 90s, they would tell you that, mm. yeah, they had no issue telling you that, but I always wanted to be a teacher, but I had to, it was a very long route, so I had to do like BTECs, entry level,
right,
it was
yes.
very...
So you could knuckle down when you wanted to. Well, not when you wanted to. That's the wrong phrase. You could knuckle mm. down with some things in ways that you could never have... Go on, tell me more.
Yeah, something... If I'm focused on it, because that's what ADHD is, I'm realising as I got diagnosed, I understand what it is. When you're hyper-focused on something, you would do it. You
yeah.
would make sure you get it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I always wanted to teach, and I made sure I did it. And, I like to say I have a very unhealthy passion for young people like myself.
There's nothing unhealthy about it, is there?
Well, I go above and beyond
yeah.
for my young people because, you know, I feel that they're misunderstood.
Well, no one looked after you, Claire. So you're looking
yeah.
after them. In a way, you're looking after
yeah.
you're looking after young Claire, aren't you? In a way, it's a bit
yeah.
of projection.
No, it is.
In the best like possible to, way. In the best possible
yeah.
way.
Yeah. And I like to say to them, you know, I understand GCSEs are important. However, it's not the end of your world if you do not pass. I like to...
No, well, it's more, your health is more important.
Yes.
No one would argue with that with physical health, but I think sometimes we forget that with mental health it can be the same thing as well. When,
absolutely.
I mean, what was the... You didn't get diagnosed until you were 37. You were on your career path by then. What was the kind of... What was the big change? What was the junction that went you from being an unqualified, expelled schoolgirl to getting on, to realising that you weren't lazy or you weren't stupid or you weren't naughty? What I mean, was there something?
I left teaching and I went to study counselling for another
right.
passion. So, and then when you're doing the course, you learn about yourself. It's not actually, it's not what we think. It's not about other people. It's about yourself.
Yes, of course
and
it
I
is.
And I really wanted to understand why I am the way I am.
Like,
my head, my mind just keeps going. I can't sit still. There's too many thoughts. And why is that? And then that's how I...
And there it is. So it is. It's about a marriage almost of motivation, isn't it? And with the right environment and the right support, people who think they can't do things will discover that they can. And understanding why they can't do them in other contexts or in other environments, it's such a liberating experience, as Claire describes it. 11:28 is the time. A lot of memories coming back for a lot of people. I was toying with the idea of doing a phone-in from the other side of the classroom. But I don't know, A, how it would work, and B, whether it would actually prompt you to ring in. But I bet you've got someone in mind, like he was the lad with the washing machines, or the what was it like lad at school. And I've got some other ones as well from my next school. Thinking about the boys, I went to all boys schools, who clearly had what we would now call special education needs. And even at schools where our parents were, you know, you'd have to sell a kidney to send your son to the kind of school that I went to these days. It wasn't quite as punitive in terms of cost back then, but it was still eye-wateringly expensive. And even at those schools, you could slip through the net. You'd be looked after in ways you wouldn't have been in bigger classes or at bigger schools. But I bet everyone can think of someone who, looking back, they realise wasn't lazy or stupid or bad, but was almost certainly living with one of the conditions that we now recognise or understand. Pete in Sutton writes, I went to school in the 70s. We had a teacher who would always pick on the same lad when we were quizzed on our times tables. He had a terrible stutter. The teacher would make him stand on the chair and recite the one times table, which is just counting, isn't it? He would get so nervous and humiliated that he would stutter more and more and make more and more mistakes. And it revolts me to admit this 40 years later, but oh, how we all laughed at him, encouraged by the teacher. I pray teaching has progressed because we are led by example by our elders, particularly those in privileged positions. It might not seem like an obvious parallel, but Corpsey's been in touch to mention drop curbs. Drop curbs. Just the bit on the curb that means a wheelchair can get up and down it. You probably never thought of it like that because the only time most of us ever use it is with a pushchair. But they weren't put there for us. Just about making the world more manageable for people who aren't necessarily like you. That's all it is. And it isn't scandalous or controversial or difficult. The alternative is to put them up on chairs and mock them and humiliate them and insult them, as Pete remembers. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The government has laid out its plans to reform the special educational needs system in England. By 2035, education, health and care plans will be reserved for young people with the most complex needs. Children who currently have a plan will keep them until they reach the next stage of their education. The public inquiry into the murder of two university students and a school caretaker in Nottingham in 2023 has begun. Grace O'Malley Kumar, Barnaby Webber and Ian Coates were stabbed by Valdo Calacane. And a state of emergency has been declared in New York City due to a major winter storm hitting the northeast of the US. Airlines have cancelled thousands of flights because of heavy snow and strong winds. LBC weather, heavy rain continuing in northern and western areas, sunny spells further south and in the east, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
My name's Mark and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we
needed. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at vitabiotics.com. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, and with free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 26 minutes to 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Some news about the EU potentially freezing whatever trade deal it currently has with the US. This, of course, follows Donald Trump's latest tantrum after his own Supreme Court, which is largely rigged, but which still managed to tell him that his tariff legislation is illegal, opening up all sorts of questions and problems, mostly for the US people, but also, of course, for any population, any country, any market that sells into the United States, to which he responded by insisting, where do you even begin? Don't forget that Dick Littlejohn over at the Daily Mail wants to be governed by Donald Trump, who can't even bring in tariffs that are, can't even get a policy passed to court that he's already rigged. That's what a genius the man is. And we'll catch up with Simon Marks later, about 12:30, I think, to get our latest postcard from America. The Danish hospital ship story is a bit of a doozy, if you missed that. Why on earth would Donald Trump announce that they were sending hospital ships to Greenland? The answer is as tragic, as pathetic, and as thin-skinned, and as dishonest, and as disingenuous, and as deceptive as you would imagine anything with Trump. But we are not looking at that yet. We are looking at the exponential growth in the number of children diagnosed with special educational needs and disabilities. My personal theory is that we probably still underdiagnose. And if we don't underdiagnose now, then we have been underdiagnosing for generations, largely because these conditions didn't have a name, let alone a diagnostic process. And what the government is trying to do is recognise that the world we live in is not the world we thought we lived in. Bridget Phillipson puts it well in a newspaper article today. Despite the best efforts of schools and teachers, our system has failed to grow with it. This increased realisation of many children live with. Many children are. The result is a mismatch with a generation of young people emerging into the world without the foundations they need for life and work. So again, if you are being encouraged to worry about the cost, then the simple response to that is it is literally trying to give young people what they need to emerge into the world with the foundations they need for life and work. May get onto some elements of that a little later in the programme, but I want to continue with the question of what was it like when you were living with or dealing with these conditions, these needs, at a time when they weren't recognised or acknowledged or diagnosed or even named. Ray's been in touch. I in the early 80s, I didn't know, no one else knew about this, but I had dyslexia, which was diagnosed in 2009, and autism diagnosed 14 years later. The impact back at school of that was being constantly called slow, remedial classes, which in turn caused ridicule and being called stupid. I guess the difficult thing is that I did not know why I was like this or what was going on with me, and no support was provided at the time. Now I know and understand the world has opened up because I understand myself more. I'm getting a lot of messages like that, and they're all as moving as each other. My name is, I think, can I say Jonathan's full name out? He's put it in the message as if it is his full name. He said, my name is Jonathan. I think that's good. I think you probably want me to. My name is Jonathan Loxley. It sounds like the opening scene of a Robin Hood sequel, doesn't it? My name is Jonathan Loxley. I am 65, beaten and humiliated for countless years at boarding school and never understanding why. I am a sculptor in marble. It is brutal but necessary. The stone has carved me. I am different, lacking in many things, special in others. My work is all over the world, but I still hurt. A part of me is very lonely. The rest is full of wonder. That's one of the most simply beautiful messages that I've ever received on the programme. Eleanor's looked up your work, Jonathan, and she is absolutely stunned by your talent, as I am by the power of your message. And there it is. What's that phrase? Beaten and humiliated for countless years at school. 65 now. So back then, 50 years ago, what was it like to be all of the things that Daily Mail columnists think are made up and invented and not real, but that we know are as real as the nose on your face? Alan is in Ealing. Alan, what would you like to say?
Hello, mate. It's a first time.
Welcome. Call. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much. I love listening to you, man. It's the way you articulate things is beautiful. It's like you've swallowed a Theosaurus.
You're very kind, I think.
That is a compliment.
I know.
I'm 48 years old, and this kind of really rings true to me. And there's so many layers to this. I mean, yeah, in school, you're deemed a nuisance, you're deemed a dummy, and the pressure that the educational system puts on you to kind of thrive and to go to university and get good grades. And if you don't get those grades, you're kind of deemed less than.
Yeah.
When you leave school, this is a bit that maybe people can relate to, because I've got ADHD and apparently there's some autism there, but that's another test in itself. But and I hate labels, because when my missus said to me, maybe you should check out for ADHD, I was like, look, man, I really don't like this whole label thing that everyone's jumping on.
Yeah.
When I looked into it, I was like, okay, it all makes sense. I did the private diagnostic, and the guy said, I need to see your school reports. One report came back saying, Alan is very crafty. And I was like 12 years old. And I just thought, like, that word crafty, it's almost like Sinister's better looking brother. You know, it was such a horrible, horrible thing to have said. But anyway, long and short is, it all made sense. And when I look back at myself and I look at growing up, you know, I left school feeling less than. Yes. And you can see how people that have suffered from addiction generally have this condition, because it's escapism. And I unfortunately did suffer from a form of addiction. And, you're trying to escape from the way you felt. But when you do a deep search into yourself, And really peel back those layers of onion, and you realize that it's not you, it's not your fault, you know? And it made me feel really sad and happy when I got the diagnosis. Happy that, well, it answers a lot of questions. Sad that it wasn't my fault, right? You know, I wasn't destructive. I just couldn't conform to the way you teach. But I'm not, without blowing my own trumpet, you know, I've picked myself up, and I'm not a stupid person. My intelligence lies in different manners. I run multiple businesses. You know, I've been a professional bodybuilder as well. And that all makes sense as well. Once I got diagnosed, I didn't want to do training anymore, because that was just a guard mechanism. It was a protective thing for me. It was like, you know, like if I'm big and strong, you know, no one can hurt me. But inside, you know, it was just crumbling at the seams, you know? And it's weird, because once you sort of discover yourself and dig deep into that horrible place and open up those basements that you not dare open, but realize it's actually not that scary that I imagined it would be, you then kind of don't need that protection anymore, because you're okay with who you are as a person.
And that means that the hole that you tried to fill with whatever you were addicted to is no longer a hole inside you.
Absolutely. And, yeah, it's It's really upsetting when I'm hearing, you know, people talk. Some people don't come out of that, right?
No, they don't.
They still stay in that place of addiction. And if you look at the statistics of people that are in prison, a staggering proportion is ADHD, and they're not given the same tools to know that it's not your fault, right? Correct. And they're always thinking, I'm less than, I'm not good enough, because it started from the grassroots level, it takes it back to school. And that's why I'm not the biggest fan of the educational system. I really am not. And I have this theory, and I've spoken to quite a lot of teachers. Yeah. If you were to put people that have ADHD, and generally autism is a bolt on that kind of comes with that, right? Depending on where you are on the scale.
If you developed
a school that is designed for these conditions and the method in which they can absorb information, and you put another school of your conventional people that are real good students,
sure,
grade A's, grade B's, yeah, students, the ADHDs would thrive so much more, you know, because I can't read books. Sorry if I'm overwhelming you, but I can't read. I've never read a book.
Because your mind wanders.
The only book I've ever read.
Because your mind wanders.
Charlie and the Chocolate. Sorry.
Because your mind wanders.
Yeah, and the only one I've almost read is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but I couldn't be bothered to read the last chapter of The Elevator because I got bored after that.
It's a great book.
Yeah, but I saw the movie. Right? Now here's the thing: I read one page and I can soak up that information. The next page is just words, nothing being absorbed.
And that's not your fault. That's not your fault. That's not your fault. That's just how your brain is. It just is like that.
100%. But check this out.
Go on.
I can watch a documentary on TV that I've got the slightest bit of interest in by a professor who's talking about the most in-depth things about nuclear cells, for example. I would be able to respite that to another person in the same manner as the professor did.
And understand it. Not just repeat it, not just regurgitate it, but understand it.
Understand it so well.
Wow.
So well. And be able to, you know, pass that on to someone else in a manner in which they can understand it as well. Now, my missus, she's read thousands of books, she's got multiple degrees, and she says, I don't get how you can gain that information from watching a documentary.
Because we're different.
And yet, because we're different, because of that one size fits all school mechanism, you know, you leave there feeling, well, different, but not in a good way, right?
Tell me that. This might be a stupid question, but you said less than three or four times, and I want you just, if you can, to tell me less than what?
Less than the conventional way of the system that deems you more than. Right? If that makes any weird sense.
Yeah, of course.
Like the school mechanism is one of, you know, you have to get good grades. If you don't get good grades, you're not gonna be able to do A levels. Once you go into A levels, that's another layer of pressure. You have to get good A levels, because if you don't get good grades, you can't go to university and get a good job. Then you go to university. I mean, what 18-year-old do you know that knows exactly what it is they want to be for the rest of their lives as a career? I don't know many, right? And it's so unfair to be putting that weight on. I know we're digressing a little bit.
Well, we are and we're not, because this will be even more acute, what you're describing, for people with ADHD and similar. But it's pretty brutal for other people as well. I think what you're saying is that you're less than what is wanted.
Absolutely.
That's an amazing thing to carry. That's a huge thing to carry, isn't it, from a young age? You are less than what they want. And who's they? Well, schools, teachers, parents, society?
James, there's so many more layers to that. And you just briefly mentioned it, like parents. You know, bless my parents. They came over from another country, and, you know, the peers around them were comparing children. My child's an engineer. My one's going to be a doctor. So that weight of, you know, trying to be successful and to try and please your parents is another added rock on the back on your rucksack, if that makes sense. That
you're
carry.
Less than and all their friends' children, aren't you? You're being measured up against them all the time.
Do you see how many layers there are
to this?
And you can see that drugs and alcohol is a really appealing thing when you're in that place, just to get that window of,
peace.
Escapism.
Peace. False peace. It's false, fake peace. Fake quiet. Because, yeah, of course, when it wears off, it comes back 100 times louder than it was before.
Just hit the nail on the head, exactly that, right? Because all you're doing, you're compounding that feeling. Because when you're not drinking or not having that escapism, you're feeling 100 times worse. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great stuff. I mean, really, what a call. And you'll have affected people. Imagine how you'd have felt hearing someone when you were 18, hearing a 48-year-old like you just describe them, which is what you just did. You just describe an 18-year-old to an 18-year-old who's listening, or a 25-year-old, or even another 48-year-old. But just knowledge. Knowledge is power. Diagnosis is liberation. Understanding is all of those things. It is 11:48. We'll find out exactly what Bridget Phillipson has been saying in the speech on the subject that we've been discussing since 10 o'clock this morning after this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A once-in-a-generation reform, a watershed moment for education. It's time to send for help, say ministers.
I hope that when parents read the full shape of what we're setting out, they will see that this is all designed to deliver better outcomes for children.
As the government announces a £4 billion overhaul to make schools more inclusive, questions for the Education Secretary over how the money will be spent and who might lose out.
Will it be funded properly, and is the system going to be able to be better?
And from the classroom to the campus, a telling off over student loans.
I've got 5 years of tuition fees and maintenance loans, and it's now, because of the interest, it's £108,000.
Now the chance to have your say and put your questions to Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson in another exclusive edition of Call the Cabinet on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? It's not working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd pay off my mortgage and my mum's mortgage.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. But you forget to pay off those mortgages.
Whoops.
Because you're on a cruise with lots of money.
Money cruise, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11:52 is the time. It's such a powerful lens through which to examine today, isn't it? Yesterday. when all your troubles did not seem so far away. But get your head around why Bridget Phillipson is doing what she's doing today by listening to people tell you what happened back in their day. I just tried to call you, says Brian, and I had to hang up. I was thrown out of grammar school at 14. I became a heavy drinker until 48. I had to stop due to a broken liver. 10 years sober. I'm on ADHD medication. My education was a nightmare. Beatings and brutality, then just abandoned. Private schools are worse than state schools for this. I think they certainly can be, but every description, every experience will be different. This from Annie, who's changed her name. Thank you for discussing this. I'm holding in the tears. Hearing your caller say they were called thick is a reflection of my own treatment by my family. I got the nickname Dollop. I no longer interact with these family members. I'm currently trying to complete my neurodiversity questionnaires. The irony is that I can't focus enough to do it. Remembering, my mother likes to remind me that my six-year-old teacher told me I'd never, my year six teacher told me I'd never amount to anything. I wonder why I ended up retraining as an accredited therapist. I keep helping those who need it most to find a voice. Thank you. And I mean, I've got more messages like this than you would, well, you probably would believe it actually, but this is of a slightly different tone or timbre, from Darren. I'm Darren from Bristol. I've been a specialist teacher for 12 years in an all through special needs school. We cater for pupils from age 4 right through to 18. So we see the full journey from early years to adulthood. I wanted to share some context around the current conversation on EHCPs and inclusion. In our local authority, which is North Somerset, EHCPs are routinely reviewed and updated at key transition points, primary to secondary, year 9 planning, the move from year 11 to college. So in many ways, changes within an EHCP is already built into the system at those major milestones. From my professional experience, securing one in primary school is incredibly difficult. At that age, behaviours are often attributed to children simply being young. Many concerns are dismissed as developmental or just typical behaviour. So when a child does receive an EHCP in primary, it's usually because their needs are significant and clearly evidenced. In those cases, it's unlikely that support would later be deemed unnecessary without substantial change. Special schools are increasingly becoming behaviour-focused settings. A little more detail there, which I will take on board. But the challenge often comes after they leave these schools. The protective bubble of a specialist setting doesn't always translate smoothly into adult life, particularly when financial and social safety nets reduce dramatically after education ends. And that's very helpful, as Darren says, a practitioner's perspective from the ground. So some of the stuff that the usual suspects are encouraging you to get worried about, you shouldn't be getting worried about. And some of the stuff that we are not properly aware of, we probably do need to, if not be worried about, then certainly be on high alert. Natasha Clark has been attending the speech by the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, in Peterborough. I should shut up for a while and let her tell you what has happened.
Morning, James. Yeah, so as you've been hearing, it's such a politically difficult subject for the government to get into reform on. And Bridget Phillipson has been setting out today how she thinks we need to change the special educational needs system for millions of children, in fact, for all children. She said it's failing at the moment. She says thousands of parents are forced essentially to fight in court for these ECHP plans. They are legally binding documents which essentially force the council to provide that specialist support for children if they need it. Now, in future, ministers say that they want schools to provide that legal duty to care for all SEND pupils with all levels of special needs. However, only the most severely disabled will be able to get access to those ECHPs in future. So that is going to be, I think, incredibly controversial for many parents. So as you've been hearing from that that texter, it does mean they will be reassessed when they get to secondary school, as in fact they should be doing already. But it may mean that they get their education plans altered. We're also told this morning the Children's Commissioner is going to help oversee this reform. Ofsted are going to be assessing schools on their SEND provisions as well. But this morning, the Minister, Georgia Gold, when she was speaking to LBC, was unable to say whether some children may lose their access to those ECHPs in future. And Bridget Phillipson has been speaking this morning in Peterborough. She couldn't guarantee that either. She did, however, say that support for SEND children at the moment isn't good enough, and she believes a better future is possible.
Today, we begin to build that future together. At long last, children with SEND get the rights they deserve. The right to be included in their local state schools. The right to enjoy the same high standards and expectations that we have for other children. And we are investing billions of pounds in mainstream schools to make them fit for children with SEND. To adapt classrooms and corridors, to train teachers and teaching assistants, to make specialist support ready, to rebuild trust with families.
Now, James, we do know that the system as it is very expensive. Lots of parents fighting in court, fighting councils, and that councils have to pay out quite a lot of money in providing this specialist support, including for travel, for pupils to get to the schools where they need to get that support. So the government is basically ripping up that entire system from 2029, 2030. They say they'll spend £4 billion in the next 4 years to try and get all mainstream schools ready for this change. As you just heard from Ms. Phillips and there, more money to make classrooms adaptable, more to train teachers. The system in itself is very expensive. 1 in 20 children at the moment has an ECHP. Now that has shot up in the last few years. We know that 1 in 5 as well has additional SEND needs. Many, of course, paying lots of money to travel to schools very far away from where their friends and families are. So Bridget Phillipson saying today she wants more support to be in mainstream schools. And of course, it's a big burden for the taxpayer. Last month, the government actually wrote off £5 billion of council debt, and much of that we know is support for SEND provisions. And the Department for Education did tell us this morning they expect the government to have to do that again before these new reforms come in, and they do expect the number of children with these legal ECHP plans to go up before they go down. So I asked Bridget Phillipson earlier today whether she does expect it to save any money and whether she was confident that Labour would be in power to deliver these reforms in full in 4 years' time, bearing in mind so many parents have a lack of trust in the system.
I do hope that we can bring some of those costs down more quickly. And the reason I say that is because all of the investment that we're putting into early years, into childcare, into Best Start Family Hubs, that's where we'll identify children's needs sooner. If we can do that, if we stop it developing into a crisis, that's great for the child, but it also stops us storing up problems for the future.
So, James, very detailed consultation is now out for 12 weeks, so parents, schools and teachers can contribute to that. They've already been consulted a lot. The question now, I think, is will they be able to support this? Will charities and families be able to support this reform, or will it be seen as going a step too far? And for MPs as well, we know that decisions like this are very tricky politically, especially for Sir Keir Starmer's government. We've seen in the past with welfare reforms. Are we about to see another rebellion on the government's hands?
Well, as you say, Natasha, thank you. The devil will be in the detail. I suppose that the easiest way to understand it all is that they are going to try, at least, to make sure that all children have access on demand to support and help that is currently confined to children who have got EHCPs. And if that works, then if the Education, Health and Care Plan ceases to be the only way in which children can access support that is clearly much more widely needed, then that will be a good thing. But, as Natasha says, and as I observe at this point, the devil will be in the detail. And if it is going to be explored or examined through the lens of trying to save money while the need for support increases, in many ways exponentially, then I think we may look back on this phone in years to come and sort of reflect upon whether we learned anything from what people used to go through in the days before we knew why some children do the things they do and how they really can't help it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Australia's Prime Minister says his government will support proposals to potentially remove Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. It's understood ministers here are considering legal changes, but only when police finish their investigations. Officers are looking into claims that Andrew shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein when he was Britain's trade envoy. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott is following developments.
The letter says, in light of recent events concerning Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, I'm writing to confirm that my government would agree to any proposal to remove him from the line of royal succession. It goes on to say, I agree with His Majesty that the law must now take its full course and there must be a full, fair and proper investigation. The letter closes by saying, these are grave allegations and Australians take them seriously.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has always denied any wrongdoing over his connections to Jeffrey Epstein. The government has laid out its plans to reform the special educational needs system in England. By 2035, education, health and care plans will be reserved for the children with the most complex needs. Those currently who have a plan will keep them until they reach the next stage of their education. Speaking to LBC this morning, the Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson admitted that parents' confidence in the system is low.
I do believe that not only will children with complex needs see better support, but all children, including those who might struggle at different times when they're at school, but with the right support, their needs can be met, they will get a better system as well. But I do hope that we can bring some of those costs down more quickly. All of the investment that we're putting into early years, into childcare, into Best Start Family Hubs, that's where we'll identify children's needs sooner. If we can do that, that's great for the child, but it also stops us storing up problems for the future.
Charities have cautiously welcomed the plans, but the Conservatives say the announcement lacks clarity. A public inquiry into the murders of two university students and a school caretaker in Nottingham in 2023 have begun. Grace O'Malley Kumar, Barnaby Webber and Ian Coates were stabbed by Valdo Calacane. The hearings will examine the events leading up to the attacks and provide recommendations to prevent similar events in the future. A state of emergency has been declared in New York City due to a major winter storm hitting the northeast of the United States. Airlines have cancelled thousands of flights because of heavy snow and strong winds. And complaints about fashion purchases have risen by 21% in a year. Citizens Advice says it received almost 18,000 in 2025. It's warning scammers are increasingly exploiting people's confidence in well-known brands. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 16 points at 10,703. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, heavy rain will continue for northern and western areas. Some sunny spells further south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 12. We will return to that subject matter, but we'll also return to that question, that way into it in the future. I don't know why I find it so powerful and so moving, but I do know from my inbox that I am not by any stretch of the imagination, the only one. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Anthony Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, has written to Keir Starmer. It's funny, this. Who these days still up on letter etiquette? Do you know what I call letter etiquette? I sound like Miranda's mum now, don't I? I call it letiquette. Letter etiquette. No, never mind. So you write on the typewriter. Typewriter. How old are you? What's a typewriter, Dad? What's a typewriter, Granddad? So on your word processing packet, or anyway, so it's in type on the letter that has been released. Dear Prime Minister Starmer. That's typed out, right? And then Anthony Albanese has used a pen, I believe, to draw a line through Dear Prime Minister Starmer, through Prime Minister Starmer, and he's written Keir. So you can't just write Dear Keir on the word processor, the computer, the typewriter. I don't know. The only other time you see people do that is when they went, because the huge, not quite, I don't know, it's not a name drop, but what is it? When you're signing books, you see authors cross their name out and then sign it again. So it says, you know, I don't know, off the top of my head, How They Broke Britain by James O'Brien. If you're signing it for someone, you cross out your own name in the print and then write your own name. In long, I don't know why. I have no idea. It could be one for Mystery Hour, actually. So, anyway, that's what... Sorry, you don't care about any of this. You want to know what's in the letter, right? Dear Keir, in light... Am I the only one who's amused by the fact that... Get on with it! In light of recent events concerning Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, I am writing to confirm that my government would agree to any proposal to remove him from the line of royal succession. I agree with His Majesty that the law must now take its full course and there must be a full, fair and proper investigation. These are grave allegations and Australians take them seriously. Can I just have a round of applause for not doing that in my very, very poor Australian accent? Thank you. Because the temptation was huge. And it occurred to me, I wouldn't do that with anybody else, would I? If the Chinese premier had written to Keir Starmer, I would not do that in a Chinese accent. If the German premier, probably I'd be tempted. I don't know what that means. But anyway, I didn't. So go me. And the Australian Prime Minister joins the UK government in these contemplations because it has been reported, as you know, that the government is considering introducing legislation to remove Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of royal succession. The Defence Minister told the BBC at the weekend that it was the right thing to do, regardless of the outcome of the continuing police investigation. He remains eighth in line to the throne, despite being stripped of all his titles, including Prince. And I find this absolutely fascinating. Because, well, look, two things. Number one is, it doesn't happen very often, but when it happens, my goodness me, it happens with a vengeance. I wish that we had, like, little finger pads or something so that everybody had to tell me where this story is sitting on a scale of 1 to 10 in their own brains. Because there's no point doing it as a phone-in. If I want to find that out, how much do you care? Because what if 10 people really, really, really care and all 10 of them ring me, but the other 1.5 million people listening to the programme don't care at all? Do you see what I mean? So, and the same with texts, because even taking the effort to do a text is an indication of caring. So it removes you from the sample. It's not an objective sample. It's not a reliable sample of people. The only truly reliable sample of people would be if every single person listening had in front of them a screen upon which, on pain of death, or at least punishment, they were required to hit a number between 1 and 10 to tell me how big this story is to you in your world. Okay, right, we can do it like this. Hands up. This will work. Just put your hands up. Then I'll be able to count. Hands up if you talked about this at the weekend with friends or family or an other. Did you talk about it at the weekend with friends or family or an other? Can my own colleagues at least join in? Hands up if you talked about the Andrew Mountbatten Windsor story at the weekend with friends or family or anybody else. Keithin, did you not? You're the producer of the biggest current affairs phone-in in the history of commercial radio, and you didn't talk about the biggest story we've ever covered. Didn't? Oh, right, had a quiet one, is it? Well, I did. Keith did. Did Rebecca? I can't see her hand. She did. So it's just you. But on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we going to put it? See, that's where. So that's the point one. I don't know. Have some sort of app. You can't do it via the app, Melvin. Good thinking. But it wouldn't work, would it? Because most people who don't care wouldn't vote. Nobody really. And also, what sort of a phone-in would it be? How much do you care? Hello, James. I don't care. First-time caller, long-time listener, big fan of your work. I don't care at all about this thing you're discussing. It'd be up there with that time I nearly asked you to ring in and tell me what it's like not to have a phone. I came so close to doing it. I wish we could find the tape of that, Keith. I'm pretty sure I got halfway through the sentence. The story in the newspaper, wasn't quite sure what to do at the last hour of the programme. Story in the newspaper about the number of people who don't have a phone. I thought, God, that's interesting. I wonder what that's like. I know, I'll do a phone-in on it. Give me a ring now, 0345 6060 973, if you don't have a phone. And I think I may have got to the O, possibly the 3, although the number was different in those days. So, that's interesting thing to me, but probably not to you, number one, is how do we gauge the levels of interest? The newspapers inevitably are dedicating pages and pages and pages to it. I think it's hugely important. I enjoyed Thursday's show, if that's the right word to use, so much, because it was a voyage of discovery and education and elucidation. So much royal coverage when we hit the rolling news button at LBC. So much of it just involves saying the same thing over and over again in a slightly different order or with a slightly different guest. But it was endlessly, ceaselessly fascinating. Will he be drinking his coffee out of a polystyrene cup? Will it affect this? Will it affect that? Will they be taking his fingerprints? Where will he be? What's going on? And of course, throughout, we remind you that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor continues to deny all wrongdoing. But this line of succession angle, I mean, I've got a question in my mind. The answer to which I can't imagine. Because surely everyone has to agree. If you can take people off the line of succession, then why should anybody be on it? If you can just decide, society, subjects, governments, if you, the line of succession, I'm reading a little bit at the moment about when they chucked one of the Jameses, when Anne got on the throne, they'd thrown her dad out for being a Catholic, hadn't they? And then there was a worry that her half-brother, the old pretender, was favoured in Anne's will, so they might have brought him back, which, of course, the Scottish lobby in the court wanted. So it, we forget, when we're buying into the royal mythology, we forget how bonkers it is. So Anne was replaced by George, who was German and hardly ever came here. I don't think he ever learned English, did he, George the First? So, anyway, the point being that the succession is seen as a divine bloodline. The succession is mystical and magical. The line of succession is mystical and magical and divine and ordained by God. I wonder who, and this is something we will never know, who do you reckon the last monarch was who genuinely and truly believed that they were sitting on the throne of these islands because God wanted them to? That's not a phone-in. But I'd be interested in your text answers to that question. Is there any way of knowing? I mean, Henry VIII can't have done, can he? Given that he kind of invented an entire church just so that he could divorce Catherine of Aragon and marry his mistress. What? So, it looks to me as if Andrew is going to be removed from the line of succession sooner rather than later. And at first glance, I've got absolutely no problem with that. But at second glance, if you can remove somebody from the line of succession, then what is the point of the line of succession? I need to get this question right, otherwise you're not going to ring me. We haven't got long, actually, on this, because I've got a couple of guests I want you to listen to before the end of the programme today. So if you can answer this question, hit the numbers now, 0345 60 60 973. It's not what's the point of the royal family, it's the question, it's a subtle question, this. If the line of succession is so fluid and man-made's a good phrase in this context, isn't it, I think? It's so obviously man-made. If man can make it, man can unmake it. Then why should anybody be on it? If you can take Andrew off it, then what argument is there for leaving anybody on it? Especially if he isn't charged with any crimes or convicted of any crimes. He's just taken off it for being a bit gross, allegedly. So if the question is, if they remove him from the line of... Well, there's two questions, isn't there? There's always two questions. The first is, beyond the detail and everything that's denied and everything that's alleged and all of this, beyond all of that, is this story, this is what I really want to know, is this story, is this scandal changing the way you think about the royal family? And you can only answer that question if it is. I don't want you to ring me and tell me, no, it's not changed. Well, do I? I don't know. Anyway, I'm laying down the law a bit too much. There's something about the story that is changing the way I think about the royal family. It's reminding me why, as a younger man, I found it unjustifiable, not just ridiculous. As an older man, I find it vaguely ridiculous, but it's utterly justifiable. And goodness knows, we all hate change. Let's just leave things as they are. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yada, yada, yada. But there's something about this scandal, and I can't quite put my finger on precisely what it is, except perhaps the man-made nature of monarchy, the reminder that it's got nothing to do with the divine right of kings or the intervention of God. That's one of the things that they've told us over the centuries to keep us supine and to keep us in our places. There's something about this story that is changing the way I think about the monarchy. And if you are also going through this, can you put into words why? Why is this story changing the way you think about the monarchy? 0345 6060 973. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And then the second bit of the question is the hypothetical, although barely hypothetical. I think it's a pretty good bet that they're going to remove him from the line of succession. And I find myself thinking that if there's no line of succession, then there's no monarchy. Am I making sense? Keith says I am, so that's a big yes. The idea that if the line of succession is the monarchy, the whole point of monarchy is succession. It's literally why you could, if you went to school in the 1950s, you could recite all the kings and queens from William the Conqueror right through to Elizabeth II. There's only been one more, spoiler alert. So if the line of succession can be tinkered with willy-nilly-ish, then what is monarchy? Oh, come on, please play with me on this one. That's one of the best questions I've ever asked you. But I appreciate that if this were a fairground stall where and I've got the mallet and I hit the thing and the thing flies up the top, the bell's not ringing. The question is brilliant. It's one of the best questions I've ever asked you. But I appreciate it's not traditional phone-in fare. But if the line of succession doesn't mean anything, what is monarchy? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What is it? If you can take people off it, then what is it? If it's optional, if it's in the gift of humans, what is it? If Andrew can be removed from the line of succession, then who should be on it? What is monarchy if the line of succession is permanently pending? Oh, that's a nice phrase, isn't it? I like a bit of alliteration. And listen, you don't have to go all in on that hefty one, which is pretty big. Walter Badgett would have struggled with that, and he's a 19th century constitutional expert. He's the one that said, don't let the light in, as we discovered on Friday's show. But otherwise, then just tell me whether or not this entire scandal is somehow changing the way that you think and feel about monarchy in general. 0345 6060 973. So if the line of succession is permanently pending, then what the heck is the monarchy? And is this current scandal unfolding in a way that makes you question or rethink your entire attitude to the concept and the current modern reality of the British monarchy? It's 20 minutes after 12. Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 606 973.
So if you're taking out of the line of succession, presumably you take his children and his grandchildren out of the line of succession as well. Do you see, I hope I'm conveying how potentially significant this could be, because it makes it absolutely inarguable that it's not all a bit daft. At least that's what I think. If you take all of his children and grandchildren out of the line of succession, do you know what happens to Prince Edward? 15, take away 3, carry 4. He goes from 15th to 8th. He moves up. That's like Kidderminster Harriers towards the end of the season 3 or 4 years ago when we got into the playoffs despite being completely out of the running at Christmas. It's like one round of results came in and everyone we needed to lose lost and everyone we needed to win won, and we ended up moving from about 15th to about 6th, and we qualified for the playoffs at the last minute and we got promoted. Those are the days. So if the line of succession can be dabbled with, tinkered with, destroyed, what exactly is monarchy? Sophie knows what I'm talking about. She writes, the line of succession is not a detail. It is the spine of the system. Without it, a monarchy ceases to function as a hereditary institution and becomes either elective, unstable, suspended, or replaced. I completely agree. In fact, I have to agree because you've managed to articulate it better than I did. Louisa is in Hitchin. Louisa, what would you like to say?
Well, I think the way that it was put by Sophie is actually correct, that you can't, the fact that we've had the monarchy previously removed and then brought it back shows exactly how man-made it is.
Yeah, but everyone pretended it was God's will back then, and that Cromwell got the most appalling posthumous PR in the history of people, practically, and it was all essentially chalked up to satanic intervention and all manner of things. So the old feeling would be that God's will has prevailed, and that's why the current monarch is on the throne.
Well, I take your point, but the fact is that civilization has moved on. Society is incredibly fluid. Things that were illegal are no longer illegal. Things that were taboo are no longer taboo.
Yeah.
We have all moved on as a society, and now the monarchy is, I mean, you know, don't cut myself for saying it, but it's much more, the monarchy is much more a figurehead than anything else. We've got a government that we elect to run our society.
Yeah, but if we get rid of the line of succession, if you take someone out of the line of succession, you are destroying the line of succession. Even though there is something still there, it's not the line of succession
anymore.
But
the line of succession, they were so, once upon a time, the monarchy was so keen to protect it that they were all intermarrying to the point at which we had loads of terrible diseases that, you know, have gone down for generations. So do we really need to protect it to that extent?
I don't know. I'm just wondering what the average punter is going to do with the knowledge that the line of succession is meaningless. It is not written in blood or cast in stone or any of the things that it was supposed to be. Is this scandal changing the way you think about the royal family at all? I sense not, Louisa.
The way I feel about it is that at the moment, economically, they cost us less than they bring in. And
that's
as
not
long.
True.
Well, last time I looked into
it. It's nonsense.
So.
Ask me how I know. Ask me how I know.
Go on, how do you know?
Pyramids.
Mm hmm.
What do you mean? Mm hmm.
Go on, I'm waiting for the rest of it. Pyramids.
Well, we haven't had any pharaohs for ages, but loads of tourists still go to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, mm-hmm?
I'm waiting for the rest of it. So loads of people go to Egypt
to see the trappings of royalty, without any royals being there. Windsor Castle will still be a tourist attraction, Buckingham Palace less so. We can still have a changing of the guard and horse guards and all of that malarkey.
Why would you need a changing of the guard if you've got nothing to guard?
Well, I might move in. We'll find something really valuable. We'll let the Beckhill know they're not ideal at the moment. They're having their own family troubles.
I will do my research, because as far as I'm concerned, once that balance changes, once they're costing us more than they are bringing in,
isn't it? And I think William is conscious of this, actually, judging by some of the things that he has said. But if the light, yeah, okay. So you're a bit like I am. I suspect you're a bit younger than me. Just that simple measure of pragmatism. I don't really care how ridiculous it all is. The pragmatic argument, the utilitarian argument, is that it currently does, in financial terms, more good than bad. If that balance changes, then get rid of the lot of them. But I just wonder how significant the absolutely irrefutable proof that the line of succession is a load of old man-made toot would be to a monarchist or to an ordinary person with a relatively ambivalent attitude to monarchy. Anthony's answered Louisa's final question. You turn Buckingham Palace into a hotel and you keep the changing of the guard, so they guard the guests, especially because London is so dangerous and unsafe now. How do I know that? I've been looking at some internet posts by people who've never been here. Oh, and the woman that Nigel Farage wants to run for mayor. That they insist, Mayor of London, they keep telling me how dangerous London is, despite the fact that I live here, go out regularly, and never encounter any of the horror shows depicted on Twitter. James is in Loughton. James, what's going on?
Yes, James. I think this is a very, very good point, and I find myself in a strange position of agreeing with you, which is really uncomfortable. However, moving on, I think you're actually right about the succession.
So what
thing
things
right
do you disagree with me? Is it the racism that you like, or the homophobia that you find yourself agreeing? What are the things that we would disagree about?
It's because you're too clever to argue with.
No, that's just because I'm right.
No.
So what are the things that you disagree? What are the things you disagree with me about then?
No, I'm not going to get into that.
Why not? You're too ashamed to say so.
No, I'm in the discussion.
So it's the racism.
Stop bullying me on the radio.
I'm not. You started it.
I'm going to speak to nice Nick Ferrari. He's much nicer.
Yeah.
He's much more reasonable.
Matthew's in Heathrow. Matthew, what made you pick up the phone?
Yes, well, I believe the line of succession should actually be just for the working role. So, you know, even Prince Harry, as he's agreed or elected not to be a working role, then they shouldn't really be in the line of succession. It's
because you can come off it yourself if it has a magic to it, if it has a mystique to it. You can abdicate, but if it is to serve any purpose at all, you shouldn't be able to remove people from it. Otherwise, it becomes man-made. So if Harry made... Look, I mean, to blow your point completely out of the water.
Yeah.
If Harry became king, he would be a working royal.
Yeah, but he's elected or agreed or, you know, he's like abdicated by going to America and not wanting anything. Yeah,
if he became king, he would be a working royal. The only reason you would remove someone from the line of succession, Matthew, is to make sure that they can never be king. And that's why Andrew is in the frame for being removed. And Harry, the war hero, has done nothing wrong except fall in love with a woman of colour, is not hearing people, apart from you, no one else is speculating about removing him from the line of succession, because the line of succession has a mystique and a magic to it that removing anyone from it would destroy.
Because
under your rule, I'd put Anne ahead of all her brothers. And, of course, she's actually behind them.
Yeah, but I mean, like, just sticking with Harry for the minute. I mean, if something was to happen and he was the next one to be king, I mean, would we want someone king who's not been living in the country, someone who didn't want to?
You've
do
heard
the
of
job?
George. You've heard of George the First, have you?
Yes.
Where did he live?
Yes, well, I suppose. Yeah, he was.
Well, where did he live?
Where were they? If you update me,
Bavaria, mate.
Yeah.
Before he became king, he lived in Bavaria. Where did he live after he became king?
Did he come to England?
Nope, he still lived in Bavaria.
Yeah, and do we want a king what is not...
What?
You know,
Doff cap, tug, four, lock down with Harry. It's 12:31. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The Australian Prime Minister says his government will support proposals to remove Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. Ministers are understood to be considering legal changes once police finish their investigations. The government has revealed its proposals to reform the special educational needs system in England. It means by 2035, care plans will be reserved for only children with the most complex needs. An inquiry has been opened into the deaths of two university students and a school caretaker in Nottingham in 2023. The hearings will examine the events leading up to the attacks of Grace O'Malley-Kumar, Barnaby Webber and Ian Coates. LBC weather, bright spells in the north and east to start, cloudier in the southwest with patchy rain, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved. You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 9 years running.
Whether you still own it or not, if you had a diesel car built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Diesel emissions claims are still open for Ford, Nissan, Renault, Mercedes, BMW and Jaguar Land Rover. Don't miss out. Join millions of drivers across the UK. Check your vehicle now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at Vitabiotics.com. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy, how's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60
973. It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It happens every week. It happens every time I talk to Simon Marks. I've got a vague map in my head of things we should be aware of regarding Donald Trump, still the President of the United States of America, but I'm conscious that I will probably forget one of them or include one that is arguably less important than one of the ones that we haven't included, or that there will be something that you're very exercised by that I've managed to miss completely. Happily, Simon Marks normally manages to keep us on the straight and narrow. So, fingers crossed, and here goes. Tariffs, Simon. You put them in, you put them out, you in, out, you shake it all about. Where are we today with regard to Donald Trump's tariffs and what happened to the Supreme Court? I thought he'd rigged it.
Yes, well, the Supreme Court is always, I think, the most fascinating instrument of government here in the United States, James, because much as it is easy for people to say, well, there are six Republican-appointed justices and three justices appointed by the Democrats, therefore the Supreme Court is going to rubber stamp everything that Donald Trump asks them to rubber stamp, that isn't the way the Supreme Court works. The justices have a duty to determine whether any specific decision that comes before them has been enacted in accordance with the American Constitution. And when you have a President of the United States who, particularly on this issue of tariffs, so flagrantly violated the American Constitution, using a piece of emergency law that says nothing whatsoever about the power of a president to impose tariffs, using that emergency law as an end run around Congress, which has constitutionally the sole power to impose and regulate tariffs, is plainly unconstitutional. So for all the fury and the vituperation coming out of the president's mouth on Friday towards particularly two of the three Republican justices who turned against him in that decision, Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, two justices
that he appointed to the court during his first term in office. He's completely failing to understand that the court is not appointed to engage in party politics. He also, by the way, lied about Democrats on Friday. He said that Democrats on the Supreme Court, because they were Democrat appointees, well, they're always an automatic no. That's simply untrue, as he should know, because he has benefited from the fact that some Democrat appointees to the court have enraged grassroots Democratic Party supporters by siding with Donald Trump on a couple of previous issues. So where we stand now is where the markets always knew we were going to stand. And it was pointed out to me on Friday that, you know, at the stroke of 10 o'clock, as that decision emanated from the Supreme Court, eviscerating not just Donald Trump's tariffs, the key pillar of his trade policy, but the key pillar also of his foreign and national security policies, the markets didn't bat an eyelid because they'd already priced it in. In fact, the market ended the day up. There was no panic sell-off because they'd all priced it in. But where it leaves Donald Trump is with the central thrust of his governing policies in tatters. As you know, he's announced this 15% across-the-board tariff to try and make up for it. He can only do that for 150 days without congressional approval. And what he hasn't done at all is explain to the American public how he spent the last year saying that part of the reason for these exorbitant tariffs was to force international companies to get around those tariffs by building factories and manufacturing plants here in the United States. The New York Times is pointing out this morning that only last Tuesday, in a bid to curry favor with Donald Trump, the Japanese announced a further $36 billion of inward investment into the United States. That was on Tuesday. And then, of course, on Friday, the Supreme Court completely overturned the apple cart, which must have left the Japanese wondering why they had agreed to put $36 billion of inward investment into the United States. So this really causes him an unbelievable amount of complexity, uncertainty and distress as we are today on the eve of tomorrow night's State of the Union address.
Oh, gosh, popcorn time. It's almost as if he's a petulant man-child who doesn't know one end of a legal policy from the other, but who are we to speculate on such matters? Now, here's a strange question. Why did he announce that he was sending hospital ships to Greenland?
Well, I think for a couple of different reasons, and if everybody's missed all of this, the President of the United States in a social media posting accompanied by another one of these AI-generated graphics that he likes to put up, showing Donald Trump and the Americans in a swaggering position on this occasion towards Greenland, announced that the U.S. is sending one of its hospital ships, and remember the U.S. has two of them, the Mercy and the Comfort, to Greenland to assist in the medical treatment and evacuation of people in Greenland whom President Trump claimed are unable to access adequate medical care there. A couple of different things going on here. First of all, and I think most importantly, this was an effort by Donald Trump to remind everybody in Europe that if they think the Greenland issue has gone away, they are mistaken. If Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General, thought that he had successfully diverted the president's attention away from Greenland during their meetings on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum in Davos, all we've done is postpone the inevitable confrontation over Greenland that is coming. But secondly, he appears to have been irked by the fact that an American submariner needed emergency medical treatment in the waters off Greenland last week. And the Danes evacuated that member of the submarine crew. They sent a seeking helicopter out to pick him up and take him off for urgent medical treatment. And that appears to have stuck in Donald Trump's craw, the fact that the treatment couldn't be provided on board the vessel or that it didn't fall to the Americans, but the Danes thought it was appropriate on humanitarian grounds, obviously, to move in and help that member of the submarine crew. So this is all deeply psychological within Donald Trump's mind. By the way, those two hospital ships that the Americans have in their fleet, neither of them is heading to Greenland, and neither of them can can, because one is undergoing maintenance at a port in Alabama.
It's up on bricks. It's up on bricks, isn't it?
Literally. In dry dock, undergoing maintenance in Alabama, having the exhaust changed, and that one won't be available until April. And the other one is undergoing maintenance that is going to take a year.
He hasn't even
complete.
Got a ship to send, but he's sending a manufactured AI picture of a ship. I mean, the mind actually boggles. Ron Filipowski puts it well, as you will know, the editor-in-chief of Midas News, former federal and state prosecutor, and a very interesting commentator on US politics. He switched from the Republicans to the Democrats in 2020. Thank you to Greenland for providing emergency medical care to a US sailor on board the submarine, and Filipowski is an ex-marine himself. Since we did not have adequate resources in the area to treat him, I'm sorry that our president felt the need to cover up our shortcomings with a deranged ghost hospital ship post. On the other hand, it could be the best way for a US citizen to get free medical treatment, actually.
Well, absolutely. And also, by the way, Donald Trump never thanked the Danes for doing it, which is just so on brand for Trump,
of course,
you know?
It is.
Extraordinary.
And that brings us, of course, to the thing that I don't think we were joking last week, were we? That we suggested that he becomes more likely to do the worse things get for him politically, and that is to start making eyes at Iran.
Well, there's no doubt that he has moved a massive military array into the region. This is the largest assembly of American power since the war on Iraq was waged in 2003. And there is a growing sense here in Washington that he is very serious about taking what could be protracted military action against Iran. Remember that last summer, the bunker-busting attack on Iran's nuclear facilities was done and dusted, very, very quickly. It was one and done to all intents and purposes, with the Israelis also joining that attack, or the Americans joining the Israeli attack, depending on how you look at it. This looks like a much more serious potential series of military actions, and certainly there is reporting here suggesting that the president over the weekend was contemplating the possibility of enduring action in what would be seen around the world as an attempt to unseat Iran's government. Now, the Iranians keep saying that the talks with the U.S. through third parties that have been taking place in Geneva have been going very, very well. There was a solid basis for cooperation, they claimed, late last week. Not phraseology that we've heard the American side echoing, but the Iranians are certainly aware that the clock here is ticking. The talks that are underway are only about Iran's nuclear ambitions and the extent to which the Iranians are going to be allowed or not going to be allowed to enrich any uranium moving forwards. But I think that the pressure now is building, not just because the clock is ticking on those talks, and the president said he'd give it another 10 to 15 days, which is sort of this sort of meaningless punt that he does from time to time, saying he'll make decisions in a couple of weeks. He may want to make decisions sooner than that. I mean, he's got such a monumental turnaround task ahead of him in that speech to Congress tomorrow night, the State of the Union address, his big night on American television. And he couldn't have a worse wind at his back with the tariffs decision, with the U-turn in Minneapolis and the withdrawal of at least some of the federal law enforcement agents that were deployed there following the killing by them of two American citizens on the streets in January. A whole array of data moving in the wrong direction as far as his approval ratings are concerned. He's got nothing, really, to propel him to the podium in the House of Representatives tomorrow night. And he needs a distraction. There's no question about that. And it may well be, as we were saying last week, that Iran is the most tempting distraction available to him.
And speaking of meaningless punts, Steve Witkoff, his special envoy, has gone back to claiming that Iran is a week away from having industrial-grade bomb-making material. Is everyone just glossing over the claims that were made after the attack mere months ago, that they'd wiped everything out and they were about being sent back to the Stone Age, or well, that's not actually his catchphrase, is it? But that Iran's nuclear capabilities had been absolutely obliterated by that hugely successful mission, but now they need another mission to deal with the things that haven't been obliterated at all. Am I sounding like I'm reporting on a different age? Do we no longer remember things like that in the States?
Fact-based reporting is very much out of the window on this side of the Atlantic. But yes, this was a total obliteration, according to the President of the United States. Even at the time, there were reports that Iran's facilities hadn't been as degraded as the White House and the Pentagon were insisting, that the Iranians had successfully squirreled some of their enriched uranium away in the days before those bunker-busting bombs were launched by the United States. But the president and his Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, wouldn't hear anything of it at all. This was total obliteration, and they suggested that the media, of course, was being treacherous for daring to suggest that this had been anything other than an absolutely unmitigated success. Well, now, apparently, even President Trump's own government concedes that it wasn't the unmitigated success that they said it was, or, of course, they could just be saying it now as a pretext to take more military action against Iran because he needs a distraction. It is very Wizard of Oz over here at the moment.
Isn't it just? Well, I don't know who that makes you. Who does that make you, actually?
Dorothy, no question. Isn't it? Dorothy with the red slippers.
It's 11:48, Simon Marks. Hopefully we'll catch up with you again this week. But goodness man, well, we need to catch up with him after that. State of the Union address has actually been given. But it's not funny, obviously. The laughter that you hear Simon and I sometimes engage in when covering these matters is the laughter of despair, truly. And turn your attention next, after the next little hiatus, to another story that is being quite extraordinarily fact-free in many contexts, many media outlets that should know better. I'm talking of the Chagos Islands in general and the claims by Nigel Farage in particular. So Nigel Farage, if you didn't know it, this weekend, he flew to the to Mauritius in a private jet, pretended that he'd been stopped from getting onto the Chagos Islands, and then flew back again. Upon one thing we can all agree, that is what the voters of Clacton want from their local MP. Jetting around the country on private jets for photo opportunities while blowing smoke up the... Well, no, actually, that's a bit mild. Jetting around the world on private jets for meaningless photo opportunities while completely misrepresenting the facts to the great British public. So we'll talk next to someone who actually knows what they're talking about. It's 12:49.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Australia wades in on the monarchy as Prince William reveals he feels anything but calm. Lib Dem leader Ed Davey takes your calls. And is your child's SEN support safe in Labour's hands?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pucker Herbal Tea. Ah, pucker. Nothing beats nature.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to... That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Party time! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla speed test intelligence data 2H2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
You're really building that business, Josh.
That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 12:52. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I suppose you'd have to describe it as a successful Stop the Boats campaign if you were to take Nigel Farage's word at anything close to the truth this weekend. A whining age man attempted to make his way to a territory where he had no business being in a small boat, but he was prevented essentially by reality. But we'll come to that because I'm joined now by Philippe Sands, King's Counsel, lead counsel for Mauritius between 2010 and 2024. Because, Philippe, we need a long overdue explainer on exactly what is going on with regards to the treaty that Keir Starmer has signed, or the deal that Keir Starmer has signed with Mauritius regarding the Chagos Islands that Donald Trump was in favour of and then opposed to and then in favour of and then opposed to and then opposed to and then in favour of. And your guess as to where he sits today is as good as mine. So I'll begin, if I may, by asking, how big is the gulf between what you, as a lead counsel heavily involved in this case for the best part of a decade and a half, understand, and what much of the UK media has been reporting on the subject?
Hi, James. Well, it really just depends what media you read. There was a good piece yesterday by Ben Judah in the Sunday Times, which actually began to set the record straight. But papers that ought to know better have not been reporting this very accurately. In short, 2019, the International Court of Justice in The Hague rules that Chagos is part of Mauritius, not part of the UK. For 3 years, the UK, under the Conservative government, ignores that decision. Then in September 2022.
Boris Johnson years, we should remind ourselves, lest anyone doubts the delinquency of such a neglect.
Indeed, Boris Johnson with his abiding commitment to the rule of law. Yes. But then I'm going to surprise you, because who changes everything in September 2022 but none other than Prime Minister Liz Truss, who unleashes a negotiation with Mauritius to resolve this long-standing problem. Actually, a pretty sensible decision, and she's supported by her foreign secretary, James Cleverly, and that is then taken over by Rishi Sunak. And finally, by the summer of 2024, you've got a very nearly completed draft treaty, 90% complete. Then there's an election, and then the Labour government basically wraps it up. So it's a sort of Tory treaty, to be honest, which is why all these accounts of Mrs. Cleverly and others complaining about this treaty is really very peculiar. The treaty basically is a win-win for everyone. The UK base at Diego Garcia, the US-UK base, stays basically for 100-plus years. The Chagossians, who were forcibly removed, are allowed to go back. There's provision for the protection of the marine environment. It replaces insecurity with security, and that is a really good outcome for everyone. And that's why President Biden and then President Trump supported it.
A couple of wrinkles in it that many people will be even more unaware of. One, I may have misunderstood, but if we hadn't abided by the International Criminal Court, then the likelihood of China flexing muscles in the same area without response would have been increased. Is there anything in that?
If the International Court of Justice hadn't given its ruling and it hadn't been followed...
ICJ, not ICC.
Yeah, then there would have been... It's fine. I get confused the whole time.
That's more of a worry.
Then there would have just been uncertainty and insecurity and a lack of stability. And that is the kind of vacuum into which others insert themselves. But the reality is, if you've been to Mauritius, it's a country whose closest, colleague is India. It doesn't do anything without India giving the get-go, and yes, you can do that. India's been deeply involved in these negotiations, and there's no way India is going to allow Mauritius to give any of its islands, and it's got plenty to give away if it wanted to China. So the Chinese thing, frankly, is a bit of a red herring.
Okay. Wrinkle number two, this is my favourite, is that we can trace some of this back to Brexit.
Oh, yes, this is very peculiar. The vote to send the matter to the International Court of Justice and the General Assembly came in 2016-2017. And basically what happened was, because of the Brexit vote, all the EU countries said, you know what, it's not our problem anymore. You're on your own. And the UK on its own could only muster sort of 14 or 15 countries out of 200 to support it, to stop the case going to the ICJ. And then when it came back from the ICJ, things got even worse. And the General Assembly resolution, basically to accept and give effect to the decision on Chagos, the UK and the US managed to persuade the grand total of four countries out of 200 to support it. So it's a pretty solitary world out there. That's the context in which to understand Mr. Farage's visit. He doesn't seem to want to look at the facts.
No, well, I mean, I have some sympathy for Nigel Farage on this case, because I have recently been denied entry to the SIS building on the South Bank, Porton Down, and GCHQ by the UK government. So how much sympathy should we have with his claim this weekend that he had been denied entry to the Chagos Islands by the UK government after jetting to the Maldives on a private jet for about 10 hours before jetting back again?
Well, it's a very long flight. I don't know how many times you've taken a 10-hour flight to then be denied entry. I mean, I'm familiar with the trip, because in February 2022, I made the trip. We didn't have a plane. We didn't. We just had a boat chartered by the government of Mauritius, and it took 3 weeks to get there and back. And that's what I'd really like Mr. Farage to do, if he really cared about this issue.
Oh, we should have let him do it. So it took 3 weeks to sail there and back.
Took 3 weeks.
And he thought he was going to be able to do it on a wet Sunday afternoon. Well,
no,
probably not wet.
He flew to the Maldives. Maldives is the closest.
Oh, I see. It's a bit nearer.
The closest place. And so from the Maldives, you can do it, well, you can do it by a seaplane in a couple of hours, or it's, you know, a good day by boat. But the point is that the Brits are not allowing anyone onto the island. There's a group of Chagossians who've made it on without permission of the UK or Mauritius. Mr. Farage wanted to join them, and he was told he couldn't, and he was subjected to the same rules as anybody else. What he should have done, if he was smart, was ask the government of Mauritius to help him visit, and the Mauritians, you know, who knows, maybe they would have said yes.
I see. And he would, I mean, I would, and you would, and he would need a visa as well, presumably, to make it.
Well, he would need the permission of the Mauritian government, because it is now part of the sovereignty of Mauritius. The Mauritius doesn't require British nationals yet to have visas, but presumably if the UK starts having visas for Mauritians, then that will soon change. But look, I mean, all of a sudden, he's developed an interest in the last months on this place called Chagos. For 15 years, while this case was rattling on through various international courts and tribunals, as far as I'm aware, he displayed no interest whatsoever in it. And in particular, what really sort of grieves me is the newfound sympathy of certain politicians for the Chagossian community. You know, these are people who were forcibly removed from the Chagos archipelago. Now, subsequent generations have wanted to go back. And for 15 years, while I was involved in the case, no one gave a toss about them. None of the Tory politicians, none of the Reform politicians expressed the slightest interest about this community, with the exception, perhaps, of the MP in Crawley, which is where many of them in the United Kingdom live. But frankly, it's a forgotten community.
And we will find out more about, well, we've done a little bit on this programme, and we will no doubt do more, because this story has an extraordinary sort of half-life. Philippe Sands, KC, many thanks indeed. Philippe, as you heard, was lead counsel for Mauritius during these negotiations between 2010 and 2024. We should really have done a misinformation on that, but I mean, he's quite a big cheese, so I'd have felt a bit silly if we were playing out our silly little jingles while we're dealing with a big cheese like that. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also, we've run out of time as well, download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at four, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. That big announcement this morning on the special educational needs changes that the government is bringing in, I'm going to focus on them partly throughout the second hour, but fully on the third hour. So your calls in both. I'll be joined by Sir Ed Davey from two to take your calls on that announcement on SEN and a few other big issues of the day as well. The big question, I'm sure, in your household, if it is an issue in your household, is will I get or will I keep? Will my child get or keep the support that they need or already have? But I'm going to start the programme again with the threat to the monarchy posed by Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's links to Jeffrey Epstein. If you go to the LBC app, you'll see an opinion piece from me in which I say I think a Pope Benedict style resignation could be on the cards.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Australia says it would support plans to remove Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor from the line of succession. Ministers are believed to be considering changes to the law, but only once any police investigation has finished. Officers are looking into claims Andrew shared documents with Jeffrey Epstein while working as the UK's trade envoy. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott has more.
On Friday evening, it was announced the government would consider introducing legislation to remove Andrew from the line of succession when the police investigation concludes. That move must also be agreed upon by all of the realms of the Commonwealth, as it would change their succession too. So the fact that Australia's PM has essentially led the charge on this and said they would back it is significant.
The former Prince Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing over his ties to the late sex offender. The Prime Minister has admitted the current system for children with special educational needs in England does not work. He's revealed reforms worth £4 billion to make provision more inclusive. It will mean by 2035, though, that the support will be reserved for only the most complex cases. Schools Minister Georgia Gould was asked on LBC this morning about those reports.
I just want to say two points of real reassurance for parents. The first is if your child is at a special school, your child will remain at a special school for the whole of their education. And if your child is at a mainstream school, you know, we are building up new support and a new system. So, you know, we won't be asking anyone to transition to that new system until that support is put in place.
A public inquiry has been opened into stabbings of two university students and a school caretaker in Nottingham 3 years ago. Grace O'Malley Kumar, Barnaby Webber and Ian Coates were killed by Valdo Calicane. The hearings will examine events leading up to the attacks. The BBC has apologised for failing to edit out a racial slur shouted during yesterday's BAFTA Film Awards, and the show can no longer be streamed. It was shouted by Tourette's campaigner John Davison as actors Delroy Lindo and Michael B. Jordan presented an award on stage. Tourette's Action says it deeply understands the harm caused, but has called for understanding of the condition, which leads to involuntary verbal tics. And Team GB are back in the UK. They won 5 medals at the Winter Olympics in Italy, including a record-breaking 3 golds. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 9 points at 10,696. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, bright spells in the north and east to start, cloudier in the southwest with patchy rain, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
I've got that feeling. Yeah. Butterflies in the stomach. Yeah. My heart is racing. I'm smiling for no reason at all. Yeah. I can't think about anything else.
Well, what's their name?
It's Škoda.
With 0% APR for 3 years across the Škoda range with Solutions PCP, it's love at first drive. But this love story ends March 1st, so visit škoda.co.uk. Indemnities may be required, maximum 36-month term, Škoda Finance.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. If you're just joining us here at LBC, a lot to talk about this afternoon. I'm going to focus in the second half of the programme heavily on special educational needs, that announcement today by the government. And at two, I'm going to be joined by Sir Ed Davey, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, to take your calls. Certainly for half the time he's with us, for half an hour, he'll be taking your calls on SEN. So do get those calls in now on 0345 6060 973. But we'll ask him about some of the other big stories of the day, not least the ongoing woes for the royal family, for the monarchy, for the institution of the monarchy in relation to Epstein and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and their friendship and their links. At the BAFTAs last night, or on the way into the BAFTAs last night, the Prince of Wales was walking through, and another question about it all was thrown at him. Didn't answer it, but it was thrown at him. And in a conversation about whether he'd seen the film Hamlet or not, he revealed that he wasn't feeling calm enough at the moment to watch it. I kind of know what he means, but he wouldn't feel calm at the moment, would he? John Sopel is here to join me, to talk more about this, co-host of Global's podcast, The News Agents. I mean, that was an interesting revelation, really, from William, wasn't it, yesterday?
Well, insofar as it's a revelation, you know, we've discussed we've discussed this on your show before, Sheila. You know, what's remarkable is how, you know, there have been occasions where Prince William has been out and about, he's been in radio studios and the like, and no one has kind of, you know, said, we do need an answer to this question. Yeah. And what we know from the Prince and Princess of Wales is that they support the statement issued by the King, that icy cold statement saying, you know, kind of putting maximum distance between himself and his brother. And William wants to put as much distance as he can between himself and his uncle. Because, of course, it is doing absolute untold damage to the monarchy.
At least William can claim some generational distance, can't he?
Yes, he can. And I suppose that what Charles would say is that he wanted to do things about this earlier on, but all the time that his mother was alive, it was impossible to do that. And following the death of her, you know, the late Queen, I think he has made these moves. Now, whether it's too little, too late, whether it was adroit enough or fast enough is a debatable question. But I think it's the actions of the late Queen herself that demand scrutiny. And, you know, shouldn't we be told how much was paid to settle the case in New York brought by Virginia Giuffre against Prince Andrew? Because the figures bandied around £12 million or whatever it is. I mean, was that our money? Was that taxpayers' money? Or was it the Queen's private money? And does the Queen have private money? Because don't we support the monarchy?
Because there are now investigations as well into exactly what amount of taxpayers' money might have been used when then Prince Andrew was a trade envoy. There's all kinds of questions around that spending and who paid for what when. Just before we get on to my theory that the